First communion one got me particularly poignantly, and there is always in these tragedies a danger that the reaction sometimes overshadows the event, the reality. Of course, that's a horror show made infinitely worse by disgusting politicians amplifying the lies of alleged rapists in order to help incite riots outside refugee hotels. But unfortunately, the people who do that don't seem to have any conscience. The rest of us do. So what question should we ask this morning?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a former head of NATO is to accuse Keir Starmer of showing a corrosive complacency towards defence. Lord Robertson will use a speech tonight to warn that Britain can't be defended with an ever-expanding welfare budget. The UK has committed to spending 3.5% of GDP on core defence by 2035. But the former Defence Secretary Lord Hutton has told LBC News the state of Britain's armed forces now is pretty woeful.
Words don't equip the Air Force, the Navy and the Army with the kit and equipment they need. After a decade or more of hollowing out, which we've become all painfully aware of in the context of the current conflict in the Middle East. So this is a real wake-up call moment. The government should have already set out a plan for how they're going to improve and increase the capabilities of our armed forces. They haven't done that. We don't have a sense yet about the additional money, when it's going to be available, where it's going to go, what it's going to buy.
The Care Minister, Karen Smith, said the government will play its part to stop a repeat of the Southport knife attack. Phase one of an inquiry found that Axel Rudakabana could have been stopped if previous behaviour was flagged by officials and his parents. Three young girls died in the attack on a dance class in 2024. Speaking to LBC this morning, Karen Smith stressed that the Home Secretary, Shaban Mahmood, will act on the report recommendations.
One of the things the Home Secretary identified yesterday is looking at the prevent strategy, and previously that was focused on ideology, that things around this particular person's, really quite shocking encounters with various bodies was not taken. As she said, it was, seems to be everyone's problem, so no one's responsibility, and that is a clear failure, and I know she's going to work very quickly to get back on those recommendations.
It's reported the United States and Iranian negotiators are to return to Pakistan for peace talks later this week. Negotiations broke down last weekend. The US started a blockade of Iranian ports yesterday. The police watchdog's investigating 11 officers for their handling of a crash at a school in southwest London in 2023. Two eight-year-old girls died after a Land Rover hit the study prep school in Wimbledon. The Metropolitan Police says it will provide every assistance to the IOPC. An inquest is due to open later into the death of the Soham murderer Ian Huntley. He died last month after being attacked in a prison workshop at HMP Frankland. A 43-year-old man has been charged with murder. And the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have begun a four-day visit of Australia, their first trip there since 2018. Harry and Meghan greeted patients at a children's hospital in Melbourne. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 32 at £10,615. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a sunny morning for most, but widespread rain developing later, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting, like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. And it is one of those happily rare days, or at least thankfully rare days, where we turn our attention to something that is truly out of the ordinary and utterly hideous. Been thinking a bit in the last 24 hours about the word populism, for obvious reasons, I presume, because of largely the extraordinary defeat of Viktor Orban in Hungary. And a bit like fascism, it's one of those words that is very difficult to pin down precisely. I lean more towards the simplistic solutions to complicated questions, as one neat interpretation of it. But it's also, it's a sort of political playbook built upon the idea that everything is an opportunity. So three little girls get murdered in hideous circumstances in Southport, and a certain type of politician, a populist politician, without even pausing for breath, seeks to turn it into an opportunity to thump a personal drum of prejudice. In the case of people like Nigel Farage, of course, it would be anti-refugee prejudice, disseminating the lies of an alleged rapist in order to help incite people to attack refugee hotels, or rather buildings containing some of the most vulnerable people in our society. And then, of course, lionizing and championing people who called publicly for completely innocent human beings to be burnt in their bed, all in reaction to a murder that had, was committed by somebody who was born here. And I wonder if we'll ever hear a more stark reminder of the opposite of populism, the necessity of the law being impartial, than we just stumbled across in our headlines there. Because an inquiry into the murders committed by a man we will refer to for the duration of this conversation as AR, demands an inquiry. Could you imagine anybody feeling or expressing a view that there's no need for an inquiry? It can't bring anybody back. There's no particular questions to be answered. And then compare it to that little nugget in the news there that you may have missed about an inquiry into the killing of Ian Huntley in prison. I can't imagine that there would be two killings perceived and felt more differently in the hearts and ears of the average observer than those two. And the law, of course, has to treat them the same. The law has to respond identically and devoid of all emotion. So that's the opposite of populism. The populist politician will respond to murders like the killings of B.B. King, Elsie Dot Stancombe and Alice Da Silva Aguirre by looking for personal opportunity, by looking for an opportunity to enhance their own position. If it's a racist position, then you would do so by lying about the refugee status of the killer, or claiming that the killer had come over on a small boat, which loads and loads of people did, encouraged, in fact, by the algorithms of Elon Musk's social media platform. And, of course, some politicians who do know better, don't know, fall into the trap of using the phrase should know better, some politicians who categorically do know better but choose to be disgusting, chose to disseminate the lies of the alleged rapist Andrew Tate, and therefore encouraged followers and others to riot on the streets of our cities, to render everybody in the country potentially unsafe and vulnerable, while pretending that their target was exclusively entirely innocent and vulnerable refugees. That's why, of course, those hideous events on our streets became known as the Farage riots in many homes and households and media outlets. And the opposite of that is Keir Starmer's response. Keir Starmer has to respond to it coolly and calmly and almost clinically. And he has done so by calling this inquiry, the first phase of which reported yesterday. And in the unlikely event that you've missed any of it, it's absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, it is absolutely horrible. To the point where you could be forgiven for finding it unbearably emotional. I think of the parents and the compounding of their agony, the constant compounding of their agony. First of all, their horror is turned into a political opportunity that sees scenes upon our streets the likes of which should not ever happen, should, let alone encouraged by prominent politicians and public figures and commentators. But the idea that they are dealing with their own agony and seeing it turned into violence, murderous bloodlust and political opportunity is a real mark of a society in deep trouble. Deep trouble. And then, of course, the focus upon the perpetrator somehow sometimes feels as if it's taking away a little bit of attention from the suffering of the family, the surviving family. That's why I that was the right word to use here. I don't know what the right word is, so I'm going to leave a blank where a verb should be. And I look at the pictures of Bibi, Elsie, Dot and Alice with an extraordinary sense. I'm going to be completely honest with you. An extraordinary sense of there but for the grace of God. Go any of us. My daughters have had their first Holy Communion, just like Alice has clearly just done in one of the photographs of her. My daughters happen to be extraordinary fans of Taylor Swift, or they were when they were a little younger. So had there been Taylor Swift dance classes in Chiswick or Brentford, we almost certainly would have signed up for them. And that proximity to peril is something that is both constant and invisible. We don't like to think about it, and my goodness me, we shouldn't think about it, because the toll it takes on you, if you live your life constantly conscious of the peril that lurks around every potential corner, you will go mad, Horatio. But these moments, and the last time I felt like this was actually the Manchester Arena bombing, where it just hit me harder than other tragedies and atrocities do, because I felt closer to it. I think I told you, didn't I, that there's something about taking your children to a concert that only parents and grandparents probably will know this, but you catch yourself sometimes watching them more than you're watching the stage. As if it's particularly if it's a performance by artists that you're not that into, but you catch yourself watching your babies instead of watching the stage. There's something in that moment that got utterly, utterly shattered by the Manchester Arena atrocity, terror attack. And there was something about these killings. That's why I got so cross about the speed with which people like Nigel Farage tried to turn it into a political bandwagon. I don't hold the man in very high regard, but even I was shocked by the depravity of his reactions and responses and the absolute absence of remorse as the evidence and the facts and the truth began to emerge, because you just found yourself feeling more keenly what it would be like to be in the position of the Kings, the Stankhams and the Da Silva Aguiars, precisely because you could more easily imagine being in their position, a little bit like you could easily imagine being in the audience for a concert. I wanted to say that first, because inevitably and correctly, our attention turns to the findings of the inquiry, the phase one inquiry. And the findings are looking at the ways in which it could have been avoided. I don't know whether you find it comforting or compounding sometimes when you kind of respond to terrible things that are happening by acknowledging the inevitability of tragedy or the existence of evil. Terrible things will happen. Terrible things do happen. And they can't be helped. But this story is different, because what this report concluded yesterday is that it could have been avoided. That there are 2.5 things identified. And looking at the headlines today, it's interesting to see how different organs have gone with different answers to that question. But the report itself identified the system, if you like, or the authorities and the parents as being the 2 key agents of failure, the 2 key areas of responsibility for what happened. Because one thing is completely clear in this report: had they done better, these little girls would still be alive. And that's why my thoughts this morning went first and foremost to the agonies, the absolute agonies that the parents must be going through, the knowledge that it wasn't inevitable, it wasn't the kind of unavoidable consequence of reality or the fickle finger of fate. It was human failure by the authorities and by the parents of AR. The phrase used by Sir Adrian Fulford to describe the latter was that they bore, quote, considerable blame for what occurred by obstructing efforts by mental health and social services to intervene. The couple, especially the father, Alphonse, failed to stand up to their son's behaviour and displayed manipulative and harmful attitudes towards the agencies involved in his care. One of the most striking conclusions from the inquiry's extensive investigation is the sheer number of missed opportunities over many years to intervene meaningfully, which directly contributed to the failure to avert this disaster. It was not, as Sir Adrian Fulford said, a bolt of lightning out of a clear blue sky. Other interpretations of the report have elected to prioritise autism and a misunderstanding of autism as one of the reasons why the Southport killer's increasingly erratic and violent behaviour was often played down by agencies. And there is a tendency in the British media at the moment to treat autism and other neurodiversities as if they are a sort of mark of Cain. But it's in the report, a misunderstanding of autism meant that the Southport killer's increasingly erratic and violent behaviour was often played down by agencies. So it's not a question of whether or not autism contributed to these killings, which is a question I heard being asked in hideous circumstances shortly after them, but it's a question answered in Sir Adrian Fulford's report by the misunderstanding of autism. So there are three factors here. One, I'm afraid, almost certainly involves Osborne's razor, this sort of tragicomic instrument that we stumbled across together about a month ago. It was a texter called James, I think, that brought it into the inbox. The idea that the program of cuts and austerity that was begun in 2010 for entirely ideological reasons is almost certainly one of the roots of problems happening today. So you've got undertrained, you've got poorly resourced, you've got low morale agencies, but none of that is enough in Sir Adrian Fulford's report to excuse what happened. And I'm not really minded, and I don't think anybody will be, to challenge any of the findings of the people who have published hundreds of pages of report and spent hours and hours and hours going over almost every single aspect of this tragedy. For example, something you may have missed, that they singled out Elon Musk's X platform for being particularly uncooperative compared to other agencies and other institutions because AR was looking at stuff on that platform that many of us believe shouldn't be publicly available, let alone to clearly deeply sick 17-year-old teenagers. I may, if there's time, get around to reading you or telling you what they had to say about X. It's a bit of a grim litany, that, isn't it? Taking stuff back to cuts, taking stuff back to social media. But the report doesn't go there first and foremost. It goes to two places. It goes to the authorities and it goes to the parents. And I want to talk about the parents. Or rather, I want to talk today about parents, because I don't know what you do. What's the greatest impulse that you have ever felt in your life? Forgive me if you're not a parent, because your answer will be different. This is, for me at least, a rhetorical question. The greatest impulse you've ever felt in your life. One of the best friends I'll ever have, who's no longer with us, adopted a boy who was a little older than, well, quite a bit older than I was when I was when I was adopted. He adopted a 2.5-year-old. And he phoned me up that afternoon. And he just said, "It's true, isn't it?" I said, "What is, mate?" He said, "You would throw yourself under a bus for them." And he'd only had the lad in the house for half a day. But he's right, isn't he? You'd throw yourself under a bus for them. So what the hell do you do when you watch them grow and realise that they are wrong? Ill? Evil? Which of those three words do you prefer? Because I think the correct phrase to use in this context is probably hideously violent, dangerously violent, a risk to you and to others. What do you do? How do those two overwhelming impulses, the greatest impulses that human beings probably ever have, fear and love? How much of what we do is defined ultimately by fear and love? What the hell do you do when the thing you fear is the thing you love? thank God or Donald Trump that most of us never ever have to face that question. What do you do when the thing you fear is the thing you love? And of course, what this report makes clear is that it's not enough, of course, to protect yourself from the thing you love that is also the thing that you fear. You have a responsibility to protect others, and it is that responsibility that the parents of AR utterly, utterly failed to observe. I wouldn't normally go in on the slightly simplistic route of blaming the parents, but on this occasion, I'm afraid it's a stopped clock moment. It isn't a populist or a simplistic knee-jerk response to simply say, I blame the parents, as is so often the case. The institutions failed, the authorities failed, but their ability to do their job has been here fatally compromised by the failure of the parents. But it's a failure that I think begins to make sense. It comes out of, or it comes into focus, doesn't it? A bit. When you think of it in those two terms, the two greatest impulses any human being will ever feel are fear and love. So what does a parent do when the person they love becomes a person they fear? I want you to tell me today what it's like. 0345 6060 973, because I think quite a few parents have a little bit of knowledge, and in some cases a lot of knowledge. There's a sort of graph of understanding what it's like when your child is a danger to themselves. We've seen some of the figures for self-harm and similar, and that can be a very harrowing and heartbreaking conversation. We've had it on this program many times. But when your child is a danger to others, when your child, you know, you don't just fear, but you know that your child is capable of hurting other people, whether it's you and your other children, or whether it's complete strangers or school friends or neighbours or whatever it is, when you know that your child is capable of doing terrible things. What, I mean, look, the operational question, the political question is, what can you do? What should or could these parents have done better? Now, you can answer that from a perception, or rather a position of knowledge. Yeah, you know, as someone who works in the agency, someone associated with CAMHS or with social services or with any of the other institutions involved here, up to and including the police and the NHS, what should the parents have done when they found knives in their boy's possession, when they knew that he was accessing absolutely hideous footage on the internet, when they knew that he was looking up footage of school shootings? What should they have done, stroke, what could they have done differently? 0345 6060 973. And then if I'm so sorry if this is triggering for you, because you know what I'm talking about. I don't know what this would be like. But what is it like when one of the people you love most in the world becomes the person you fear most? What the hell is that like? What do you do? And remember that most of us know nothing about this world. Do you lock away the knives? Should they have all been in a safe in the kitchen, even the stuff used for cutting bread? Do you lock doors? What do you do? How do you protect yourself and others from the person who you can't stop loving, but you are now terrified of? 0345 6060 973. It's 23 minutes after 10.
LBC.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to 100,000 euros per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing too savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing too savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
25 minutes after 10 is the time. That's why you have reports. There are two ways for politicians to respond to atrocities like the one that we saw in Southport a couple of years ago, in July of 2024. One is to take to social media to incite race riots. The other is to determine to find out as much as you possibly can about what happened in the hope of minimising the likelihood of it ever happening again. There you have Nigel Farage, and there you have Keir Starmer. And the first phase of the report is in. And it's horrible reading, but it does provide answers. The parents failed, the authorities failed. We begin with the parents. What could or should they have done differently? But for me, as a father, the question I am most obsessed by this morning is this. What do you do? What do you do when you're frightened of your own child? Trevor's in Lincoln. Trevor, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, it's a difficult subject, isn't it?
But certainly is.
I was telling you, the person on the phone, basically, when I got with my wife 28 years ago, one of the children, I inherited a family,
okay,
which was totally fine, and then one of the children started to turn violent when I had my own child.
Okay.
He had issues with his dad and that, which is a separate issue, but he started showing signs of violence, let's say. He started being aggressive towards my daughter, who was three at the time. Started being violent towards his mother. Tried with me, but it didn't work. Not that I ever touched him or anything. That's not an issue. But the thing is, we see things that was going wrong, and so we reported him to social services.
Can you tell me a bit about the conversation you had with his mum before you did that?
It was a build-up over time, to be fair.
Yeah, of course.
It was build-up.
So she reached a point where she thought something's got to be done here as well.
Totally, yeah, to protect the other kids.
Yes.
He started to be really violent towards her, throwing things at her, throwing things at me. We couldn't leave him alone with the other kids because it was so violent. He was getting so violent. So we reported him to social services. He wouldn't go to school. They got involved. They even sent people around to get him up. He threw things at them. Basically, what they tried to do at first, they tried to blame us.
Right.
Until they realised it was actually him. When he got to the ages of 13 and 14, it was actually him that was just bad. Bad behaviour. He wouldn't listen to any discipline or anything like that. So they come
involved. Did he get any sort of diagnosis?
When he got older, he got to about 17, 18, he was ADHD and bipolar.
Yes.
He spent his life in care. His old life. We used to go see him and that, and then that was all that. He had good days and bad days.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a massive to the actual backstory, but we didn't feel that the care system just gave him a house. They just gave him food, but they didn't give him anything else. So when he got to the ages like 17, 18, he got put into prison because of the life he was living.
Yeah.
And every time he come out of prison, there was never no help for him from the care system, even though they said they would help. So obviously then he'd go on the streets and that. We couldn't have him home. We realised that at a young age he couldn't live with us because of the violence.
Yeah.
And we had other kids to think about.
Of course.
But to me, They were useless, to be fair. They kept blaming us until they realised it was him, and then they just give him a house to live in. They didn't work with him. They didn't diagnose him.
There's no treatment here, or intervention, or rehabilitation, or therapy, or any attempt to help him come to terms with what he is or who he is.
No, there was nothing. He's 28 now, and yeah. he's going back to prison soon because that's the life he lived, and that's up to him.
Is it violent crime that he...
Yeah.
can't control it. Well, you see, this is the thing, isn't it? I'd be interested in what words you use. Can he help himself?
He's the loveliest lad in the world when he's normal.
Yeah.
But obviously, with the life he's lived, when he gets on drugs, he gets stabbed, he stabs people. But that's his life and the way he's chose. We've tried so many times with him to make him turn a corner, but there's never no help to back him up. So when he comes out of prison, there's never nowhere for him to stay. So he ends up on the streets, and then it's a violent circle. Then he stays on people's houses. Then he gets involved into drugs again, and then he...
How's it affected the other children?
Well... They don't have anything to do with him, to be fair, because we've kept him apart. Well, his brother, who's 18 months younger than him, obviously at one point he idolised him, but then it turned into hating him because of what he'd done. When they turn adults to self and they realise what's happening, then they don't want anything to do with him. As much as he'd want something to do with them on his good days, but we can't risk his bad days and good days mixing. So they do see him now and again, once, twice a year, but that's their choice. But they
understand. I mean, you've been through it, haven't you? And in some ways, you've ended up in a, I don't want to say a happier place, I'll say a safer place than other families who've been through similar have ended up in.
It's not where we wanted to be, but it's where we've had to go.
Yeah, so it's a nice way of putting it, Trevor. When you follow this story, when you listen to the radio, or you read about what happened in Southport, and particularly today, when this division of blame between the parents and the system, as it were, both bearing huge responsibility, not just for the failure, but for the fact that it happened. It didn't have to happen, is the phrase that keeps ringing around my own head. And don't answer this question if you don't want to. Apologies if it's inappropriate. When I say, what should the parents have done differently, what would your answer as someone who, I mean, for want of a better word, someone who kind of got it right, how would you answer that question?
Obviously, I feel sorry for the family and the people that died, and also the people that was there. It's absolutely
unbearable. Of course it is.
I blame the parents, for one.
Yes, of course.
I'm not saying I'm perfect or right, because ours was 20 years ago or whatever, and we've lived through it and come out at the end, even though that's not the choice we wanted at the end. But they see signs, and they should have acted on them signs, because if they did, then them three young girls would still be here, and the parents wouldn't have gone through what they've gone through.
You can't get past that. So although the system didn't do enough... They did do enough to sort of rein him in a bit, or to take him out. Well, to take him out of being a threat to you.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, we took him out from being a threat to us and our family.
Yes.
The worst things that could happen is something bad was going to happen. The person's, I won't give him his name because he doesn't deserve a name.
No, of course.
The person who committed the crime, his mum and dad, I do think should be punished for not acting. But things that go on at home, you see things at home, and if you've got a bit of common sense, you know what's right and what's wrong.
It's the first question I asked this morning when I came in, actually, was whether or not he was... whether or not the parents were liable for any form of prosecution. I think in the United States they might have been, but under the United Kingdom law, under British law, sorry, or English law, which would apply here, they can't really... If he'd committed something and they'd help him cover it up, then obviously there'd be a case to answer. But in this, the things that they did, the manipulative and harmful things that they did, and the failures that they displayed, don't constitute crimes.
which is a shame because they knew what was going on. Yes. No, they didn't know what was going to happen, but they knew.
They
about
knew something
what
was going to, or they must have feared. Their greatest fear would have been that something was going to happen, and yet they acted. It would appear in a way to protect their son from.
Yeah. And we've tried our best to protect him.
I can hear that in your voice.
And it was heartbreaking for the wife to actually realise that something had to be done. But yes. That was, to us, that was the time to ever say, look, we need to help. It's not that we're a failure, it's just that something's not right. And that's what they should have done. They should have realised that something wasn't right. If someone's buying knives off the internet and you're taking the delivery of them, there's something not right in your head either. To me, that's complicit in a way. Because
yeah, but I don't, you know, the police didn't arrest him in 2019, despite the fact that he admitted taking a knife into a school on at least 10 occasions. So, you know, again, March 2022, found with a knife on a bus. The police
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It's just, it is missed opportunity after missed opportunity after failure. But what we don't know, and which is why people like you are so helpful on mornings like this, even though I wish you hadn't gone through what you've gone through. What we don't know is how normal these events are, and how many times Lancashire police have let a kid with a knife go home with a rap on the wrist, and nothing has happened subsequently. And that's where the parents move back into the picture, because they knew.
And that's the thing, isn't it? They knew what was going on. Come on, we're not that dumb that you can't see things that's happening in front of your
exactly
eyes.
That. And exactly, and you and the wife are still together.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. I hope you don't mind me asking, but I'm really glad to hear that.
No, we're still together, and it's just a chapter that you just have to deal with, and you have to deal with it the best of your ability. But they didn't deal with it at all. They just shoved it under the carpet.
And that's the thing, isn't it? And I hope, just final thing, because I'm really late for the news.
Yeah, sorry.
But no, it's not your fault, Trevor. It's me. I can go whenever I want, but I think I wanted to listen to you more. The phrase that I'm thinking of, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, is that you have to cut the umbilical.
Totally, yeah. At what age? That's a question. I think ours was 13.
Right.
So, the signs were showing since he was 10. So we tried our best, and you go around protecting him, and he won't do that. That's not him. And then you realise, before we go, what I realised was is when people, he was knocking around with people where we lived, we used to think, don't knock around with him because he's a bad person. We used to tell him that. But what happens when that son is the bad person that you have to tell other people? We used to tell other people, don't knock around with him because he's a bad un. And that's horrible. But We tell people, don't let your kid hang around with our kid because he's a bad lad. And that's time when you realise something's not right. When people say to you, oh, don't let your kids hang around with him, but he was the one not to hang around with, unfortunately. But anyway, I'm just rambling.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And as I said, I'm so sorry that you have been through what you've been through, but it's been incredibly helpful for me and for everybody listening to have a little insight, a little glimpse of that moment that you just nailed, Trevor, that moment where you kind of, you turn off your instincts, and fair play to you for acknowledging that it would have been much harder for his mum, or at least harder for his mum than it was for you, because he's your stepson. And that changes things slightly, not enormously. As an adopted person, I'm not obsessed with biology, but but for a mother to cut the umbilical, to use that metaphor, is going to always be a bigger ask, a much harder thing to do. But what you've just highlighted is that moment where you know you cannot help. And they reached that moment. And instead of whatever they should have done, they elected to try and just keep everything under wraps, to try and screw down the lid on what was obviously a pressure cooker in human form. Thank you, Trevor. Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
A former NATO chief is warning the UK is underprepared for war because of what he calls a corrosive complacency towards defence. In a speech later, Lord Robertson's expected to say the conflict in the Middle East must be a wake-up call. The government says it's determined to play a key part in ensuring there's never a repeat of the Southport knife attack in 2024. Phase one of an inquiry found that Axel Rudakabana could have been stopped if his previous behaviour was flagged by officials and his parents. And it's reported the US and Iranian negotiators are to return to Pakistan for peace talks later this week. Negotiations broke down last weekend. The US started a blockade of Iranian ports yesterday. LBC weather, a dry and sunny morning for large parts of the UK. Widespread outbreaks of rain developing later. A high of 16 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
With Amex Platinum, Laura earns points on...
Can I have the soup and the salad and the tart?
And gets access to the Centurion Airport Lounge to...
Let's have a little relax, a little pudding.
And could use her points to travel for...
Las gambas con mantequilla y...
And that's because with dining, travel and lifestyle benefits, there's always more with Amex Platinum.
Representative 685.3% APR variable. Annual fee, terms apply, 18 plus, subject to approval, rates may vary.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2027 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only. At all protected.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:41 is the time. Three quick texts. You'll understand why when I get to the end of them. Trevor was an amazing man to listen to, so brave and such an example of sensible parenting, writes Kirsty in Claydon. I could have listened to him all morning. You nearly did, but that's my fault for being unconscionably late for the news. Adrian writes, dear James, Trevor and his wife are heroes. And Jason in Wimbledon writes, James, Trevor gave up on a child at 13 years old. That's disgraceful. And I think if this was a less serious subject and I was in a slightly punchier mood, I'd have a pop at Jason. But I didn't. I paused and thought and wondered whether or not it would be appropriate to say, well, we're talking about a story that shows what happens when you don't give up on a child. But I'd have been wrong to do that. It would have been lazy and it would have been wrong. Because you can do something different from what these parents did that doesn't constitute giving up. I didn't hear what you heard, Jason. Trevor and his wife did not give up on that boy. They did everything they could to help him, but it would never, they realised it will never be enough. And that's the point that I tried to push towards, that point, the Rubicon, the cutting of the umbilical, whatever you want to call it, when your parental instincts are screaming at you to never give up, but observable reality events, everything and everyone around you is screaming at you to remove this danger. Get them help, but ultimately protect my family, the rest of my family, myself. And that's why the question I began the show with this morning was, what's it like when the one you love is the one you are terrified of, when you become frightened of your own child? Sally is in Newcastle. Sally, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
It's taken a lot of courage to make this call.
Well, thank you.
I just take a deep breath. Especially to respond to what the chap said about the Trevor and the disgraceful. Yeah. It's very easy to say something like that when you haven't walked in that person's shoes.
Yes.
And you haven't had those experiences. So his story sounds pretty much like mine. I've got two boys, 18 months between them, no problems with one of them. But the other one, again, started at about 10 years old, the problems. And I'd not experienced anything like it before, so I didn't recognise anything apart from bad behaviour, a bit violent towards his brother, never me. Very violent towards himself, so if he wasn't happy with something, he would punch a wall, which I know is a very common term you hear with lads.
Sure. But he'd really hurt himself when he did that.
Yeah, but it wasn't... It didn't register to him like that.
No, I understand.
He didn't think, oh, I've got a sore hand. Yeah. It was just absolute temper. And the temper went towards his brother as well.
Right.
Anyway, it got worse and worse, and I would say the drug side of it kicked in. Right. I had no experience with drugs, didn't know what I was dealing with, and by the time he got to 18, he was still living at home, and we were dealing with his behaviour. But at 18, you can't then become involved with mental health services. So for me, I'd kind of realised what I needed to do slightly too late.
Right.
So when I tried to get help for him, another thing I picked up on what Trevor said, you can't watch your children 24/7. So when they go out and they are mixing with the bad people, you don't necessarily know. And then you recognise yourself, what Trevor said, he is the bad person.
Yeah, that resonated with you, did it? You recognised that moment in his story.
Say that again?
You recognised that moment in Trevor's story.
Looking back, I recognise it for myself, and listening to Trevor is just like... But they could be twins. It's the same pattern. Now, when it got to the point where there was I found a gun in the house.
Yeah.
And because he was still living with me, I decided that was it, and I threw him out. So what I want to explain is, you still love that person as the person you remember, the child growing up, all the nice side that you kind of get a snippet of every now and again. You know, it might be a very small conversation with him, my son, that you think that's the person I knew. But the majority of it is the horrible, nasty person. And when somebody's older, like I'm assuming the age of this person, you know, the person that's just been to... When we're talking about a person like that, parents can make a request for somebody to deal with them, like mental health services, but unless that person as an adult engages, nothing goes anywhere. And that's what has happened with my son. You know, many, many times I've called a doctor or I've called the mental health people.
Yes.
But I get the impression that until something bad happens, you're not going to get somebody to push them.
Well, I mean, it's a horrible double-edged sword, this. If you're under 18, then parents can activate CAMHS, as it were, or approach CAMHS on behalf of a child. But unless there's been very, very serious behaviour, I mean, in some local authority areas, there has to have been an attempted suicide before CAMHS will even schedule a consultation. And then, of course, if you're over 18 and you, the patient, or you, the person, don't want to access mental health services, there's absolutely nothing anybody else can do about it until you are in a situation where you might be sectioned or something like that.
That's the fear.
Yes, of course.
When you say a double-edged sword, that's one side is the love for that person that you knew and you cared for and you brought up from a baby. And the other side of it is, my God, I'm scared that I'm going to get a call to say that something terrible has happened that he's done to somebody else. I still believe now at my age he would never physically touch me, but my fear is what he would do to other people.
Including his brother.
And they've not had a relationship now for easily 12 years.
And I hope if this is something you don't want to do, then just say so. But when you think of the two boys and you think of that moment that I tried to articulate with Trevor about crossing the Rubicon or cutting the umbilical or however we're going to describe it, do you feel that? Or do you still feel deeply connected? What's the difference between the way you feel about him and the way you feel about his brother?
If my son had done what we've been talking about, this case, I could have cut it because I would have something there.
Yeah.
That would have horrified me so much.
Right.
But now, it's hanging on by a thread, if that's a way to describe
it. Of course it is. It's a perfect
way to
describe it.
I know he's out there, and I know he hasn't done that terrible thing yet.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of living a life of... It's like living grief for somebody, but they've not died.
Yeah.
And it's hoping that he doesn't do something bad to himself or somebody else, or somebody will pick up and stop it. Because the minute I heard about this when it happened, the first thing I thought to myself is, it's people like my son walking about that are a ticking time bomb. And they're not going to be dealt with until something like this happens. I'm sure the services are there if you push and you integrate with them. But if you don't, you don't know you're walking past that person in the street. And someone like my son is always just ready to overreact. You wouldn't need to push him. You wouldn't need to say something. He's always on that knife edge, ready to react.
I suppose other
people don't know it.
No, of course not. And I don't. And other people will have to answer the question of whether or not the authorities, the system, would have acted better if the parents had called on them sooner, because Lancashire Police, Prevent, Social Services and Mental Health Services all come in for very robust criticism in Sir Adrian Fulford's report. But that what you've just described is heartbreaking. I need to ask you one final question, if I may. What happened to the gun?
Straight away, I told him to give that back to whoever it belonged to. There was a knife as well, and that was given back. But that's outside of my home. I could only protect what went on and whoever was inside of my home. I couldn't do anything about.
But you didn't call the police on him at that point.
No, he left. Okay. I threw him out. That was
and
for
that
me,
was the
that
beginning
was the
of the end,
end
of the relationship.
Yeah. How could I ever have myself, even my son who was responsible for it, I couldn't have them in the house and have that. And that adds to the being scared of
Of course it does.
And it's heartbreaking. And for anybody to criticise Trevor, it's not a disgrace.
Jason's been back in touch and he's qualified his comments. And everybody's listening in the same moment to things like this. And they're all listening with very, very different personal experiences, as you've just demonstrated, Sally, because some people, of course, will have problems with the fact that you didn't call the police, but you've accounted for your actions and you've explained them to in ways that will be perfectly satisfactory to others. And I thank you for your call, because it is once again highlighting that incredible moment in a parent's life where you have to defy all of your parental instincts and cut the cord. And I pray to God that anybody who's feeling negative towards any of our contributors today never has to face that moment themselves.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
How many times do we have to sit and listen to another report or inquiry that says the multi-agency that all failed, all passed the buck, thought, no, it doesn't quite fall under our remit. But I'm sorry, multiple occasions when this kid is turning up at school with a knife and the police don't seem to do anything. They didn't even arrest him. They found him on a bus with a knife, didn't arrest him. Forget it. And nothing will really change.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which 9 years running.
Young people today, can they really handle responsibility? Or are we just kidding ourselves?
Some think young people can't manage. We disagree. That's why one in three McDonald's managers are under 25.
Hey, Kira.
Hey, girl. How are you?
All right? Yeah, I'm good. It's busy out there, though.
Like Kira from South London. She's 23 and manages a team of 20.
Let's go.
Leadership. Making it happen at McDonald's.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result.
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more Lumbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply, 18 plus.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:54. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I said I'd bring this to your attention in case you hadn't heard it already. But the head of this inquiry, Sir Adrian Fulford, said that, regrettably, his words, not mine, X, formerly Twitter, and now I quote, did not show the same ready willingness to cooperate with the inquiry as almost all other organisations and core participants. X took an inappropriately narrow view of the inquiry's first Section 21 notice and did not disclose any content data, for example, posts and likes, etc., in contrast to the approach taken by Meta. Online harm, online, and this character was online all the time, watching hideously violent material. No findings of mental illness, but a sort of self-radicalization, if you like, including hideous video of the Australian cleric Bishop Mari Emanuel being stabbed several times by a teenage assailant in April of 2024. Had watched that 6 minutes, I think, before leaving the house. I just thought that was pertinent as well. But for me, at least, the biggest of the bucks stops with the parents. And yet the idea of, you never stop loving, do you? But you have to stop caring in a physical immediate sense. You have to absolve your parental responsibilities and pass them on to somebody else. And I just wonder what that's like, what that moment is like. Aidan is in Leeds. Aidan, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello.
I'm actually going through a similar sort of experience. Not me personally, but someone in my family. So I've got a cousin who is only young. Yeah. We sort of noticed at 6 years old, his mum and dad and his family around him and us, that, you know, there's something going on here. You know, he's quite difficult to manage. Can throw a tantrum, but was quite violent. He has been through sort of the NHS and whatnot, and he's recently been diagnosed with quite severe ADHD and autism. Now, this is a boy who, he's currently 8 years old. He's got a brother who's 10. He's held a knife to his grandma. He's very violent when he doesn't get his own way,
yeah,
or if there's something else going on. He's been to parties with, you know, my siblings, and, you know, he will be the one that will start the fight. I'm not sure why. I couldn't tell you what's going on with him that makes him want to be violent, but he's showing these signs. And it's difficult to watch because you can see his older brother, you know, doesn't experience anything like that. And his older brother's struggling, you know, constantly fighting with his younger brother. It's not fair.
What help?
His mum and dad,
what help,
when you try and,
yeah, what help of mum and dad
on,
sought?
Sorry.
What help of mum and dad sought, if any?
I'm not too sure. I know they've definitely tried to push for, you know, someone to look to see,
yeah,
you know, is there something going on here and get the diagnosis. I'm not aware of any other support. I know we get support in school, but I'm not sure if they're looking to receive support from any other organisation or whatever. But it's just really tough to watch. And your caller a couple of calls ago, I can't remember his name, who
Trevor.
Sort of had a similar thing. Trevor, that was it, sorry.
That's all right.
I think he is such a good example of picking, you know, and accepting the harsh truth of a situation that he knew and his partner knew that they need to do, you know, what they did to protect their other children. And it's a similar situation in my family where, you know, I've got a cousin who's 10 years old, who's great, incredibly bright, but he's suffering because of his younger brother, and it's not his younger brother's fault, but he's just an extremely violent child. And, you know, I've pulled his mum and dad up on it and said, look, you know, what's going on here? And they saw, you can see that the embarrassment and the shame, and I hate that because, you know, they're struggling and everyone wants to help.
And there's hope as well, you see. There's embarrassment and there's shame, but there's also hope. And it's only when the hope is extinguished that we reach the point that Sally and Trevor have described, when you think, actually, this isn't going to get better. I can't fix this. And then you either do what this family did, which is almost batten down the hatches, lock the doors, try and keep everybody out because, I don't know, they're terrified of him being taken away or they're terrified of him moving out of their orbit, or you turn to the professionals, but they haven't reached that point yet. And do you know what? If it was your boy, you probably wouldn't have done either.
No, not at this age. It's too early on. Yeah. But it's just that the signs are concerning. If it was my boy, I would be pushing for any bit of help that I could get because, you know, it's scary, especially if you're, you know, putting them with other children of a similar age, you know, and they don't, you know, if they're in school and they have access to scissors.
You're aware. Yes, of course it is. And I mean, it's a really, really powerful story that you tell because the sense that Sally used that phrase, a ticking time bomb. And what you've reminded us is that you hear, I don't want to sound crass, but you can hear the ticks for a very, very long time sometimes before the bomb goes off, if it goes off at all. But it's the phrase I used about this story before we came on air, actually. I said the parents can hear this bomb ticking in their house and they're just pretending that it's not happening. They're sticking their fingers in their ears. They're turning up the television. They're just trying to drown out the noise of the ticking. And then it went off. And three little girls paid the ultimate price for that parental failure. But it's not a failure that any of us benefit from condemning without thought. Condemning it after thought is a different thing to do, and it's what I and I'm sure you are doing now.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, ministers have moved to deny claims the government is showing a corrosive complacency towards defence, which is putting Britain in peril. A former head of NATO, Lord Robertson, has mounted a scathing attack on the handling and state of the armed forces. The former Labour Defence Secretary will use a speech later to warn that Britain is underprepared, underinsured and under attack. Speaking last week, the Defence Secretary, John Healey, insisted the government is working flat out on a new spending review.
We're close to finalising it, and this is a 10-year plan. It's important we get it right, but most importantly, it's not stopping us making some of the investment decisions we need, letting the contracts we need.
The Care Minister, Karen Smith, has told LBC that the government will play its part to stop a repeat of the Southport knife attack. Phase one of the inquiry found that Axel Rudakabana could have been stopped if his previous behaviour was flagged by his parents and officials. Three young girls died in the attack on a dance class in 2024. The Home Secretary, Siobhan Mahmood, has also promised to bring forward legislation to improve agency accountability. It's reported the United States and Iranian negotiators, are to return to Pakistan later this week for peace talks. Negotiations broke down at the weekend. The US started a blockade of Iranian ports yesterday. 11 Metropolitan Police officers are being investigated by a watchdog for their handling of a crash at a school in southwest London in 2023. Two 8-year-old girls died after a Land Rover hit the study prep school in Wimbledon. And bosses at South East Water have admitted they've let customers down following widespread supply issues in Kent last year. Around 24,000 households faced disruption in November and December following a plant failure. Critical engineering works have since been completed. But Chris Chain, who's chair of the firm, has been addressing MPs on the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee this morning and said it's not been good enough.
Failure is failure, and we have failed. What's important is that we as an organisation learn from that in order that we don't fail at any point in the future. It is not right that it is absolutely untenable for customers to be without water.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 2 points at 10,584. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a sunny end to the morning for most, but widespread outbreaks of rain will develop by the afternoon. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Add more wahey to the day when you add more fun to your milk with Nesquik. Fortified with vitamin C and D, Nesquik is available in chocolate, strawberry and banana flavour. Nesquik, let's grow the fun.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 11. For reasons that I'm not prepared to inquire into, it hasn't actually been laminated. But I have in front of me a graph, a Technicolor graph, of what we believe, as in you and me and everybody else, to be the most important issues facing the country. And, I'll tell you now that defence and security is not very high up on the list. In fact, shall I run through everything that is above it? Do you reckon you could do it as a sort of party game? How many of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 issues would appear before we finally got to defence and security in the sort of hit parade of public concern in this country at the moment? It's of all adults and it's pretty recent. It comes from the 6th of April 2026. You can tick up to 3 if you are one of the people asked about this. And the question that you are answering is, which of the following do you think are the most important issues facing the country at this time? And defence and security comes in at 14th. It comes after health, immigration and asylum, crime. The immigration and asylum, by the way, if it wasn't something that was being shoved down your throats all the time by right-wing media desperate to draw attention away from the fact that most of the country's problems are caused by the distribution of wealth upwards, would not be anywhere near the top of this list. In 3, crime, 4, the economy, then tax, pensions, education, family life and childcare, housing, the environment, Britain leaving the EU, transport, welfare benefits, and finally defence and security. These are the issues that people feel are facing the country at this time. Ask them what the problems are in their own community, and oddly enough, immigration and asylum falls quite sharply down the list because it's a problem people are being told to worry about. And it works. Right? This is the thing that's really interesting to me. It works a treat. It's why Brexit happened. Tell people to be frightened of foreigners. And even people who aren't particularly racist will obey. They will be frightened of foreigners. But what George Robertson is going to be doing today is telling you to be frightened of our military inadequacies. And he joins quite a long list of qualified people making precisely that point. And what I want to talk about is why it's not higher up the list. How you get it up? How you get it higher up the list? Because you look at what's happened in recent years, recent months in particularly, and you realise that we are at a point of almost unprecedented peril, and yet. The fact that we come in at 14th with defence issues kind of proves that the general public has not reached that point. George Robertson is a former NATO chief. He's a former Labour defence minister. He is responsible for the Strategic Defence Review commissioned by the current government. And he will be delivering a fairly stark warning later today to the government and, by association, to the entire country. It is a directly political intervention from a key government advisor who will warn that we cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare budget. We are underprepared, we are underinsured, we are under attack, we are not safe. Britain's national security and safety is in peril. And he describes a corrosive complacency in today's political leadership, and going back, I think, at risk of overusing Osborne's razor, presumably going back to 2010. And I was trying to think today about what you would hit, what I would hit you over the head with most effectively to sort of wobble your head enough for you to care more. And it may be that if you listen to this program on a regular basis, the constituency that we're addressing is not overrepresented. You probably, well, I don't know. I don't want to put words or even thoughts into your head unless they've arrived there organically. Because what I was thinking, and what I think Lord Robertson addresses, is that this is the first time in any of our lives that the United States cannot be relied on. Now, I know what you're thinking. Straight off the bat, you're thinking Suez and the Falklands, right? But that isn't the point. The point is that if there were a war in Europe, the United States, and I know they weren't there on day one in the First or the Second World War, but the post-war settlement, and indeed the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the post-war settlement has always posited the United States of America at the very vanguard of our defenses. Right? I don't think that is a particularly controversial comment. More so, I think, for Britain than for any other country in Europe. That might be wrong statistically, but I'm thinking about post-Berlin Wall bases and settlements and postings. But either way, the peace of Europe has always been ensured and guaranteed by the United States of America. And that's why the Suez and the Falklands examples, although pertinent to many of these conversations, are not particularly pertinent to this one. Peace in Europe was not threatened by the invasion of the Falkland Islands by the Argentinians, or the refusal of the Egyptian leader to bend the knee to the French and the English and the Israelis over the Suez Canal. America is no longer at our side. And this, of course, coincides with a period in history where we have got enemies almost on our doorstep. Most obviously, Nigel Farage's favourite politician, Vladimir Putin. He's had a bad week, of course. His, not a puppet quite, but his key ally in Budapest, Viktor Orban, has been toppled, has lost an election in quite spectacular fashion. Viktor Orban, well, we're talking about Nigel Farage, someone that Farage thanked in 2011 for his help in, I think the phrase he used was bringing down the European project. I don't know how many alarm bells need to go off in that little axis of Nigel Farage, Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban, Steve Bannon. I don't know how many little alarms need to go off before people wake up, but I'll keep ringing them, don't worry. And Nathan Gill, of course, also part of the that conversation. The bloke who's currently in jail, having accepted bribes from Kremlin stooges for making speeches in the European Parliament that, on many occasions, could have come from the mouths of any of his colleagues in whatever party he was in at the time. But he ended up as the leader of Nigel Farage's party in Wales, close friend, protege, extraordinarily close colleagues, and essentially a Kremlin shill. So we are under constant threat. And I don't know how we make people care more. And that's actually the question. Let's not overthink it. So at the moment, it comes in at 14th. Defence and security as the most important issues facing the country. It comes in as 14th. I can't keep saying, how do you get it up? Because that is obviously a phrase that can be construed in many different ways. But how do you get defence and security further up the list? Can I leave it at that? I really want to know what your answers to that question are. Because Putin has invaded Ukraine. I bet if we were in Estonia, I haven't got the figures in front of me, or even in Poland, then defence and security would be considerably higher up the list. But the whole point about NATO and the European Union and the post-war settlement and cooperation, all things under threat, of course, from the people that we were talking about a moment ago, is that we are a united force. And yet in this country, it comes in at 14th. Everywhere you go now, there is a sort of acknowledgement that we have got a serious problem. Put in George Robertson's words today, as I shared with you a moment ago, we are underprepared, underinsured, under attack. We are not safe. So how do you get this issue higher up the list? And of course, the other question is, what does it look like? So if you have military experience, I think I've asked you in the past what you'd point to as evidence that things are bad or that things are problematic. What should we be spending money on? I think this is part of the problem. In that, you know, you talk about welfare. We're spending too much money on welfare. And they say, well, who is spending it on? Oh, those people I keep hearing about who don't deserve it. I said, but what about all the people who do deserve it? And they say, well, I don't worry about them. It's just focus on all the people. So these are slightly crass, lazy, often simplistic arguments, never more so than when we're talking about immigration and asylum. Oh, I don't mean you. Oh, I don't mean them. I just mean, oh, no, well, why did you vote Brexit? To get rid of all the foreigners. What happened? Oh, we had to get loads of foreigners in to replace the ones that had left, and they wouldn't have come unless they could have brought their families. So we ended up with much higher immigration than we would have had if we'd stayed in the European Union, that I voted to leave because I hated immigration. Says no member of Reform ever, despite the fact that those, unfortunately, are the facts. Crime? I think, again, most of us happily are less likely to be victims of crime, but probably more exercised or terrorised by the likelihood of it happening. And of course, in the context of phone theft, that observation is not true. The economy, we're feeling the pinch, tax, pensions, education, all of these things just feel more immediate. Family life and childcare, housing, God, yes. The environment, okay, nice to see that slightly higher up on the list than some of the other issues, but still probably quite low in the great scheme of things, and probably in a way quite similar to defence and security. Why don't you care more about the environment? Because I don't feel it. Why don't you care more about defence and security? Because I don't feel it. George Robertson can tell me that we're under attack, underprepared, underinsured until he's blue in the face. So can John Healey. So can all of the Tory politicians who are responsible in large part for the filleting of our military services. They'll be pretending now that it's all Keir Starmer's fault and that he should fix it yesterday, despite the fact that they both caused and created the problems. That's almost Kemi Badenoch's political career, really. Service to a party that has caused untold problems to this country, morphing somehow into a career that involves demanding that all the problems they caused get fixed by the bloke who's been in the job for 18 months. But this is a problem that needs to be fixed. And it's really hard to do. Because if you try and take the money from, for example, welfare savings, your own backbench MPs, if you're Keir Starmer, aren't going to let you. They insist, for the record, that they are delivering on the Strategic Defence Review to meet the threats that we face. Kemi Badenoch, perhaps inevitably, will say that they're going to take the money from welfare or net zero. I'm not even going to bother checking. I'll just tell you straight. She will say, we're going to get all the money from the tooth fairy, net zero, or welfare spending, and we're going to spend it all on defence, and please don't ask me about why the party I lead did nothing for the 14 years that it was in power. I'm Kemi Badenoch, and this is the end of my TED Talk. But what interests me is the psychological and emotional response to this problem. What I want to do is try to work out what it would take for us to care more and why we don't. And I'll take any answer you've got to that. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. It is 14th on a list of the most important issues facing the country. If there were planes over Preston, it would be number one, right? And no offence to Preston, I just chose you because you begin with P. If there were warships off Dover, it would immediately become number one. If we were at war, visibly, physically, tangibly at war, it would rocket up the charts and knock health off the top spot in a nanosecond. But what would need to happen for that to occur? We know that Russia is interfering in our democracy like it's going out of fashion. We heard yesterday about how the tentacles of Viktor Orban's propaganda machine reach deep into the heart of the British media and the British political system. That's not enough. And is that defence and security? Are those the things that we'd be spending money on? Would we need to see troops on the ground? they'd have to cross the Ukrainian border into Poland. Would we wake up then? I'm not sure we would. Crimea went off more or less unchallenged when Vladimir Putin decided to co-opt that territory. What would it take for... Well, actually, I mean, if you are military-minded or you do have military experience, I'm doing something that I always criticise you for doing. And I'm not asking the first question, which is he actually right? Are we under threat? Are we under attack? We're probably underprepared and underinsured, but military chiefs have been asking for more money since I was born. So two questions. Number one, how do we know that we're under attack? How do we know that we're at risk? Okay, 0345 6060973. Hit those numbers now. You will get through. And I think I could be wrong, and hopefully you'll prove me wrong. But the more military experience you have, the more qualified you might be to answer that question. Doesn't have to mean that you've been in uniform. It just means you watch these things more closely than I do. What would you point at as proof that we should be more concerned? And why are we not more concerned? Those are your two questions. You can answer either of them, neither of them, or both of them by dialing 0345 6060973. Continuing the spirit of alliteration, my thanks to Ash, who's got warships off Weymouth and troops in Tottenham. If either of those things were to come to pass, this issue, defence and security, would rocket to the top of the most important issues facing the country. It currently languishes in 14th. I want you to tell me why. I want you to tell me what we can do about it. And I want you to tell me in the first instance whether or not we really should be as worried as an increasing number of experts are telling us. It's 20 minutes after 11. Your call's after this.
This is LBC.
There comes a time in your life when you need to make a change. To start a new chapter, it's time to consider a residential park home bungalow from Ecos Group. Castleview Court in Pevensey is a peaceful gated community for those aged over 45, set in a stunning location close to all local amenities. You can enjoy a stress-free move with up to 100% part exchange on your existing property with free site fees for your first year. Make that lifestyle change today and join us at our open weekend on the 25th and 26th of April at Castleview Court, Pevensey Bay, Pevensey. Or visit ecosgroup.co.uk. That's ecosgroup.co.uk.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on all-electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term. OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost. Because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas. And Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Dread.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 22 minutes after 11. Three questions really on the board this morning, prompted by a speech that George Robertson, former NATO chief, will deliver later today. And I do normally lean into the point that people like George Robertson have been insisting that we're in dire straits militarily since I was in short trousers, or indeed since I was in the combined cadet force at school, and long before. But it feels truer to me today. I overlook the fact that it might not be. You're welcome to tell me that we don't need to worry on 03456060973. But my feeling very much is that we should be. And that prompts the second question, which is, why don't we care more about defence and security? Why is it now such a massive priority for, if you like, the expert class, while it remains a measurably low priority for the British public? And then the third question becomes, what do you do about that? Either you can speculate on what it would take to see defence and security rocket up the list of things that the British public care about, or what we could do in the absence of events to make it a more pertinent or a more urgent issue than it currently is. Because I would have thought that conclusive and irrefutable proof that the United States of America no longer gives a monkey's paw about European safety, European security, or European homogeny, I would have thought that would have been a fairly big wake-up call for this country. But it hasn't been. Quite the opposite, in fact. There's plenty of people in this country who think that the United States is either still our friend or is an organisation, a country that we should have been marching alongside into a ludicrous war in Iran. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, particularly the latter, regularly attack Europe while giving a free pass to the likes of Viktor Orbán's now extinct authoritarian regime in Hungary. So, you know, the sheer scale of the American abandonment of the post-war order of European peace should have been enough to give us all pause. But it hasn't been. We still don't care about defence and security. And the voices telling us that we need to are getting louder and louder and louder. What do you think they need to say? Mo's in Birmingham. Mo, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Thank you for taking my call.
You're most welcome.
I'm going to come at this from a historical point of view. I'm more of a student of history.
Yes.
And comparing the scenarios that you've posited with what other countries have experienced and what Britain have experienced. I think we as a public will always struggle to understand the importance of defence until war is actually in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
Where British soldiers are actually dying in a trench, or where the home front is severely impacted, you know, in the worst case scenario via missiles and bombs exploding around, or in the lesser case, either through a blockade or through some sort of infrastructure disruption or through some sort of rationing.
I think you're right. So if you see things flying over, where are you, in Birmingham? If there are bombers over Birmingham, and then somebody comes around and says, we're going to have to take the metal from your garden fence, or we're taking the church bells, you'd be like, how can I help? But if, yes, in the absence of a visible, physical, tangible threat, we're like, yeah, no, please go away. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, I look at it historically. I think most countries, many countries in the past who have had to prioritise defence, and this sounds a bit ominous,
go on,
have only done so upon seeing what catastrophic defeat either looks like and have come close to it, or have actually experienced it themselves. And I'll bring an example here.
Go on.
From my kind of like family history and whatever else. Pakistan was involved in a pretty destructive war in 1971 that saw the splitting of the country and the independence of Bangladesh.
Yes.
And it was seen as a catastrophe within the country, a real catastrophe. The Prime Minister sold the idea to his public that they may need to go through huge amounts of deprivation, even saying the saying that they may even have to eat grass to obtain the nuclear bomb, and that sacrifice had to be worth it. And the public bought into it.
Wow. Because they felt fear. They felt they felt breath on their necks.
And they've actually experienced the defeat. Now, we in Britain have been lucky enough, historically, that we've never suffered such a catastrophic defeat or come close to suffering it for quite a while. And I think the public have forgotten about that. And therefore, they don't have actually an imagination or a concept of it. And that creates a complacency when it comes to potential defence spending.
This is really powerfully put. And what? How then do you account for the... Well, I mean, how confident are you that people like George Robertson are correct and that we should be on our guard and that we should be channeling much, much more money into defence than we currently are, regardless of everything else you've said? Is he right?
We do need to improve our defence posture and our defence infrastructure. It is... This war...
Why do we, Mo?
For one thing, I think we're in an era where we need to project power,
yeah,
to carve out our peace in the sun. Otherwise, we'll just get swamped by more powerful nations. And look, I don't mean this as hyperbole.
Yeah.
I look at it, and I look at a third world country like Pakistan projecting more worldwide influence in this crisis than Britain, and that is catastrophic, and especially catastrophic for a country where I feel as a taxpayer I'm being crushed and I'm not seeing value for money. And value for money also means seeing Britain having its place in the sun, because that's where prosperity comes from.
Gosh, so you think you need a sort of military handmaiden for economic success?
I do. I think increasingly in this era, we're not talking about the post-Cold War era where history has ended, where, you know, everyone's going to become a liberal democracy. We need to be muscular, and muscular does mean having a military that is visible.
We can't stay out of Europe, can we, under this reading of the world? I mean, it's just insane that we're not in the middle of Europe.
No, I think that's why we need to work with our European allies to build this,
and
because Britain on its own...
to the question is, why is this not being made more clearly to the public? And the answer is that so many of the engines of influence in this country are responsible for tearing us out of the heart of Europe. And now we're completely abandoned on this little island caught in the middle of the Atlantic between a United States that no longer cares about us and a Europe that we've told to clear off.
For sure. And look, again, I mean, this is no... I don't mean to sound bad, but look... A lot of things around economic progress and industrialization and so on is based around the military.
Yes.
You know, countries with strong militaries do have strong industrial bases, and they do usually then employ a lot of people, and there is prosperity on the back. I know that sounds callous in the sense
you can soften the blow a bit, isn't it? Well, what is it they say? Plowshares into something? I forget the precise figure of speech. But if you have an industrial infrastructure, it doesn't actually have to be dedicated all the time to military production, but it can be repurposed in at the flick of a switch. And of course, if you have industrial infrastructure, you're better off. But then we're back to the conversation we've been having for 20 years about outsourcing and offshoring production, and the reasons for that are the same reasons why the cost of living is higher up than defence and security on this list of concerns, because people want cheap stuff. You can't have both. You can't have domestic industrial infrastructure and cheap stuff or domestic production. Mo, you're very clever. I don't mean that to sound patronising. Do you work in this field, or are you just an enthusiastic amateur?
I would say I'm more of an enthusiast. I should have worked in this area.
You're telling me. You absolutely should. It's not too late, Mo.
No, it's not too late. I'm not going to let the sands of time just disappear on this.
Good.
I should have worked on it, but at this stage, I would regard myself more of as an enthusiastic amateur who does. I am interested in this sort of stuff. Just get my beans running.
Yes, I can tell that. Well, we're very lucky to have you, and I guess this makes you a semi-professional contributing such a level of expertise to this programme. 31 minutes after 11 is the time. Former NATO chief warns UK's national security in peril. Why should we care, and what can we do about it? Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
A Labour peer and former Defence Secretary is to warn that the UK's security is in peril. Lord Robertson will use a speech later to accuse what he calls non-military experts in the Treasury of vandalism. A second man has been charged in connection with the death of Finbar Sullivan, who is stabbed in Primrose Hill in North London last week. Khalid Abdul Qadir, who's 18 and from Camden, is accused of grievous bodily harm with intent and possession of a knife. And Sir Keir Starmer and Francis Emmanuel Macron are to co-host talks in Paris to discuss the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions on Friday are expected to focus on how to keep the vital shipping lane open after the Iran war ends. LBC weather, a dry and sunny end to the morning for large parts of the UK. Some widespread outbreaks of rain will develop by the late afternoon. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth.
Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the racing?
Yeah, your best bet is to enter BetVictor for their new customer welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they give you £20 in free bets on the horse racing. But here's another tip. If you're at the races, head to the paddock. You get lots of info they don't put in the race cards.
Like what?
Like the fact I'm seeing one of them drop a lot of weight right now.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the racing at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in, bet on horse racing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 11:34. Some great text coming in. We know we are at risk because wars are not fought over ideology anymore. They're fought over natural resources. We're not concerned because since 1982, wars have been fought far afield and reported through the media. You kind of give Yugoslavia a bit of a swerve there, John. The populace doesn't feel the threat. That bit's certainly true. Picks up on some of what Mo said a moment ago. Answering your question with a question, James, writes Trigg in Dumbarton. What would I be fighting for? The system that's taken and taken and taken until we have nothing left? Why would we want to defend this? If we had pride and hope for a better Britain for all, then it would be worth building defences to protect it. Well, I mean, I guess I'd respond to that by saying that, you know, things could be worse, but the worse things are, the more hollow those words sound. Not the United States, points out Jamie, but the Trump regime. It's an important distinction. I wonder if it is, though, reading Max Hastings in the Times today and his speculations about what might come next, some of what Trump has done is broken for a very long time, if not forever. Certainly that what you might describe as European complacency or British complacency about the United States turning up if we were to get ourselves into real bother or we were to be under real threat, that's dead. That doesn't come back at the next US election necessarily, and psychologically it may not come back at all. And what on earth do you do? Even Nigel Farage is pretending he barely knows Donald Trump now. I told you this would happen. I didn't think it was going to happen quite so quickly. He's a man I happen to know, I think he said recently. I think he said something else similar yesterday. Absolutely extraordinary that you go from describing him as the bravest man you've ever met and disappearing so far up his fundament that when he breaks wind, you whistle, to trying to pretend that you had nothing to do with him at all. Be pretending he didn't thank Steve Bannon and Breitbart for helping to deliver Brexit next, but happily that's on tape. So, and of course, if you think that Vladimir Putin is the most impressive politician or the most admirable politician in the world, then you probably don't want the European, you don't want the United Kingdom to be in the European Union, or you don't want the United Kingdom to have strong military or strong defence, because the bloke that is our biggest enemy is the bloke you admire most in the world. Good Lord. As I say, you wonder how loud those alarm bells need to ring before people wake up. But the Trump regime will pass. Whether or not we return to the old order quickly or slowly is moot to this question. And I found myself also wondering what you do to persuade people to care more. That's a really tricky thing to do, because Mo's right, isn't he? You need bombers over Birmingham, planes over Preston, kayaks off Kidderminster. All right, that one doesn't work. But do you care enough? No. Why not? And then you're back to Trigg's point. What would I be fighting for? We all studied the First World War when I was a kid. One of the ways that you study the First World War is through poems. And most of the poems were quite subversive, you know. Your Wilfred Owens, your Siegfried Sassoons, your lions led by donkeys rhetoric about a ruling class essentially sending the working class to die in their hundreds of thousands in order to protect the inequalities that the ruling class benefited from. It's why, I think, and I haven't checked this, it's why servitude disappeared in the aftermath of the First World War. You're not going to come back from the trenches and go to work as a butler or a footman for one of the people that were sitting 2 miles behind enemy lines sending out instructions on what you should do next. And it's one of the reasons why in the aftermath of the Second World War we got the NHS. Because the world order, the hideously unbalanced pyramid of economy and society was unsustainable in the immediate aftermath of wars. But we're back now. We're back now to the working class queuing up to defend the interests of the ruling class. Largely by pretending that the biggest problem in the country is immigration rather than wealth distribution. So what are you going to fight for? going to fight against Russians when the man leading the opinion polls in this country at the moment not only broke bread and mentored a man who took money from Kremlin stooges in order to make deeply treasonous speeches in the European Parliament, but also considers the leader of Russia to be the most admirable politician in the world. Stevie's in Glasgow. Stevie, what's going on?
Hi, James. Great to actually speak to you. So, firstly, well, I spend a lot of time quite close to the front lines in Ukraine.
Okay.
So, I've kind of got a bit of a knowledge of where warfare is going. Mm. Now, Britain, it's not so much the fact that we're not spending enough. It's we're spending it on the wrong things. We'll spend £1.5 billion on a warship.
Yes.
But for that money, we could buy the sea drones for about £250,000 each. Which, and think how many, I'm not great at maths here, but think how many of them we could buy. And that's how much, that's where warfare is going.
Hang on, hang on, I'll just tell you. Lots.
But also, you're talking about, what do we need to see? Well, we had that Russian boat off the coast of Wales. Now, because it wasn't painted in grey, nobody saw it as a warship. But that was actually, that's mapping our underwater infrastructure. So we are kind of under attack. Russia is putting the effort into mapping out our underwater infrastructure to try and cut us off from both America and Europe.
I was away last week, and the story beeped on my radar, but I didn't dig into it. Is that you speculating, or is that what was established?
It's what I've been told from people that I work with in Ukraine.
I mean, you'd want to know why. I mean, it's not going to be there for fun, is it? Or for the weather. So they're probably up to something. And John Healey gave a speech as well last week, didn't he, about having watched very closely something that was going on in our waters. I guess that's the point, isn't it? If you've been there, what do you do in Ukraine, Stevie, if you don't mind me asking?
So I take medical supplies over to the front lines, and I'll train some of the soldiers as combat medics.
Of course. How did you end up doing that?
Because it's the right thing to do.
No, I know, but what paths did you... I mean, you've got a background in paramedicine, have you? Or
I was in the ambulance service.
Yeah.
I quit that to do this.
Gosh, good for you, man. Seriously.
Worst financial decision of my life. But
do you work under the auspices of a charity, or are you kind of self-starting?
Well, I have to fund it myself, yeah.
Okay. Stay on the line and give us some details on that. I can't do anything on air because we just have to do a bit of due diligence and double check stuff. But if people want to help you do that work and everything is as you describe it, then I'll be happy to deal with that tomorrow. But it is because you're seeing this go on that you can feel... I'm going to use that phrase again. You can feel breath on your neck. But your average punter, your average Glaswegian or your average Londoner just can't feel breath on their neck. And so they're not going to respond to this call for action, are they?
Another part of it is we're not... sorry, I'm going to have a go at the media here. We're not getting told what's going on in Europe. Did you know that Finland has recently just finished... building enough underground bunkers to house every single member of the population?
I didn't know that. I thought you were going to say something else that I had actually reported on this programme, and I was going to use that to prove that not all the media is bad, but I managed to miss that. So I'll look. But I do know that, I mean, on a much less important level, the attention put to describing what propaganda looks like in Finland is off the charts, because they know what Russia tries to do to stable democratic populations, and they are on their toes, really. They are on their guard against it, whereas we seem to have a media dominated by people who love it, who would actively encourage it. So they are on not quite a war footing, but they are on high alert, and we are simply not. And yet, if there were action in continental Europe, could we stay out of it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not just Finland. It's every European country is actually starting to take action. It seems like we have our head in the sand.
And this is, I think, what George Robertson is going to say later. And even as you speak, Stevie, Zelensky and the German Chancellor Merz are holding a joint press conference live in Berlin at this precise moment, which speaks to precisely the points that you're making, isn't it? And what do you think it's down to? If we were still in the European Union, would we be getting a clearer picture of what was going on in Europe? Or did we cut off our blood flow to our brains at the same time that we cut off our membership of the biggest single market on the planet? How do you account for the fact that we have our heads buried in the sand in ways that other European countries don't?
I'd love to be able to blame Brexit for it, but I can't.
Don't worry, I will.
I think it's because we think we're untouchable.
Yeah, a little bit of English exceptionalism, or British exceptionalism. You'd probably say English.
Well, yeah. I think it's, we still think we're untouchable. We still think we're that big, powerful military force, and we're just not.
And we still have a public discourse dominated by people who think that haven't noticed that the United States hasn't changed beyond all recognition, or even worse, perhaps who think that, or thought until very recently, that Donald Trump was a stand-up guy or a trustworthy character or a fine leader. Richard Littlejohn, of course, Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail, writing not long ago that what was it? He'd never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer refused to get involved in this war, and that he wished that we were led by Donald Trump instead of Keir Starmer. In fact, I think it's Tuesday. Stevie, take care, mate, and stay on the line. Would you just have a quick word with Eleanor and get some details on whether or not we can help with the work that you're doing? But it's not the kind of thing I can do on air unchecked or unprompted. Yeah, I thought so. There should be a Richard Littlejohn column in the Daily Mail today. What does a man who has recently explained that he's never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer told Donald Trump that he wasn't going to join an illegal war, or that he wished he lived in a country that was led by the self-confessed sex offender Donald Trump, as opposed to the country currently being led by the European leader who has got every single step of this hideous war right. What on earth does he write about on a day like today when everything is falling apart and his hero Donald Trump has just compared himself to Jesus and managed even to alienate the mad Christian ethno-nationalists on the far right of American politics? I'd remind you, not long ago he was writing an article about how he knows that Britain was brilliant 25 years ago because he'd just seen an old episode of The Bill. What's he writing about today? How is he turning his attention to the situation in Iran, the Strait of Hormuz, the madness of Donald Trump, the comparisons to Jesus, J.D. Vance's failure in Hungary, J.D. Vance's failure in Pakistan, the collapse of negotiations, the imminent end of the ceasefire? What is Dick Littlejohn writing about today, the great commentator on matters international and political? Scrapping fish and chips and jam donuts from school dinners won't shrink children's waistlines. Oh.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A truly hideous act, utterly indefensible, by President Trump choosing to depict himself as Jesus. Unsurprisingly, his Catholic vote is collapsing, and it was a crucial vote to power him to the White House for the second time. A lot of MAGA sympathisers are going to be quite religious folk, a lot of whom are going to be Catholics, few of whom, I think, will see any humour whatsoever in this disgraceful, deplorable, vile, base stunt by a president who's clearly lost his way. For him to then say, "Oh, I thought I was a Red Cross doctor." Who the hell do you think you're kidding, President Trump?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
All right, we've got Simon on the line. Simon, young people, they're just all a bit lazy, aren't they?
What are you for?
Welcome to McDonald's.
Can I get 6 minutes, please?
Of course.
Some say young people are work shy. But at McDonald's, we hired 47,000 of them last year.
Very much. So, how's your night?
Like George here, who keeps things running during a Friday rush. Resilience. Making it happen at McDonald's.
Next contestant, your chosen subject is tax.
Said no one ever. HMRC doesn't expect you to be a tax expert. But knowing the basics will build your confidence and help you steer clear of any tax surprises. So check our simple explainers to fill your knowledge gaps, from business essentials to pensions and tax. Search HMRC Tax Confident to learn more.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London with no mess, no fuss and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy, daddy cool. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply, 18 plus.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A little more on that joint press conference between Zelensky and Merz in Berlin, unfolding live at the moment. When I have it, I think that there may be an announcement regarding the expansion of cooperation in the defence sector, which is pertinent to the conversation we've been having this hour. I return you now, though, to a conversation that we were having this time yesterday, because I got a text message halfway through it that I shall read you in its entirety before introducing you to the chap that sent it to me. Hi, James. As an Iranian journalist, I just wanted to add some context. The caller, identifying herself as an Iranian-British woman, said she wanted to be the voice of Iranians she felt had not been represented. But that should not be confused with being the voice of Iranians in general. Iranian society is far too complex for anyone to state, confidently. Excuse me. Okay, no, fine. For anyone to state confidently that Iranians want more Trump strikes. Some may well have reached that conclusion out of despair after years of repression and killing by the Islamic Republic. And he goes on to make many points pertinent to the conversation that we were having. I speak of, sorry, there was just a little gremlin in the system there in case you were wondering what happened. I could hear my own voice coming back to me. Bardia Afshin is an Iranian journalist, nearly three decades of professional experience in print and broadcast media. Based in London, we probably should have had you on yesterday, but you were too busy, which is perfectly reasonable as I was wanging on in your ears. I suppose I want to begin by asking whether it is even vaguely possible to describe any perspective held by the Iranian people. I presume it's not.
Oh, yes, true. James, following your work, I understand that you appreciate Iran is too complex to be understood through simplification. And you're a rare breed among Western journalists who would don't buy simplification. And for us, Iranian journalists outside, it is a hard task to get a good grasp of what's going on in Iran and in public opinion. But what I can certainly say, the biggest mistake outsiders, Westerners especially, make about Iran is to confuse the loudest voices that they can hear from within Iran or outside Iran with the most representative voices. I would be very careful and cautious about letting the noises camp define 90 million people's will. And they replied, Iran is, as you know, is a diverse, ever-evolving society. And remember, they are under extraordinary pressure, and therefore, they are always have been misunderstood. Now we know that they are witnessing a prolonged internet shutdown, blackout, technically 8 weeks, which some suggest that it constitutes to grave human rights violation. And there has been decades of repression, and freedom of speech is not there. Freedom of media is there. So therefore, anybody claiming to know certainly what the Iranian people want they are overstating the evidence they might hold. And the only thing that we can for sure say that Iranians, the majority of them, reject the Islamic Republic, and it's anecdotal. And it's through what has been witnessed through 5 decades, through uprisings and all those social movements. And but what we cannot honestly say that how do you want to achieve that? Therefore, the lady that you had on air, she was framing the idea that the war is something that all Iranians want. I would be very cautious to claim such a thing. There are certain segments of society would
support. And it changes, of course, Bardia. I mean, I took a lot of calls from members of the Iranian diaspora in the immediate aftermath of the attacks that were, shall we say, optimistic and welcoming, and almost all contingent upon the idea that this would be a catalyst to some sort of internal uprising or some sort of internal toppling of the IRGC, of the Iranian regime. It's almost as if sometimes your enemy's enemy is your friend, and that seems to me to have morphed in a way into, look, we want to get rid of our leadership, we want to get rid of our regime from within. But that doesn't necessarily equate with welcoming what Israel and the United States of America have gone on to do in the aftermath of that first sortie.
That's so true. Again, there is a certain segment of Iranian diaspora which they have been very vocal, and they've been in favor of war against what they call, frame it as a war against Islamic Republic, and a support of Iranians' plight. And it is based on whatever Donald Trump has said previously. Mm. Is we remember that late in December and early in January, there has been a widespread uprising in Iran, which has been brutally suppressed by Iranian regime. Thousands has been killed. And then Donald Trump said that he's supporting Iranians' plight. So they bought the idea. And through some certain propaganda camp going on through some certain media outlet overseas and social media, Iranians bought the idea. But the thing is, and again, it's funny to suggest that outside Iran, some certain people claim that toppling Iran might have a collateral damage, and they portray that as a very engineered attack. They are surgically removing elements within Iranian regime. But what we witnessed was all those civilians were killed, civilian facilities being targeted, power plants. So that collateral damage, which they portrayed that as it's going to be minimal, those people who were in favor of toppling Iran through a war. But now they see that there are certain people, they are paying a heavy price. And there has been people within Iran, even through the bubble that I'm connected with, they were in favor of supporting the idea of, you know, that interference, military interference with by Israel and America. But now they paid that heavy price. So now they are not really in favor. And again, this is a society which is ever evolving, and we are dealing with an unfolding situation which is unprecedented for Iranian. But the thing is, these narratives would definitely undermine Iranians' agency. I need to undermine that to Westerners, which they forget, because, you know, we are bombarded by the current affairs and unfolding events. They forget that Iranians haven't been a passive subject throughout history, especially in their recent history. They haven't been requesting an outsider to invade Iran, from constitutional revolution to the revolution 1979. And even for past 5 decades, we have witnessed many movements that they showed that they want to have their agency
from within. So there are three questions, really, which you might ask an Iranian. Do you want the current regime to be overthrown? Do you want Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu to be the agents of that overthrow? And do you think Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are capable of being the agents of those overthrow? And you can answer all three of those questions differently.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not a representative of Iranian public opinion, or I strive to understand it. It is quite complex. But for the first question, I would definitely say, yes, Iranian regime has their own supporters. We don't have the numbers. There is no polling. I work with a gentleman who conducted a polling back in 25 years ago with Gallup, being detained, and now he lives in a forced exile. So there is no polling. What we suggest that who supports Iranian regime, who are very loud and vocal, and they are among them, there are many warmongers, they are the tiniest bit. But I could claim that through anecdotal, through what we experienced through 5 decades of recent history of Iran, the majority wants to topple Iranian regime or change it. But are they want this to be happen through war? I doubt it.
Yeah.
And I think probably, again, that on the other side of the spectrum, who are in favor of a war to topple Iranian regime, they are the tiniest. And there are a diverse society who sits in between. And they want, I think probably what they have in common is they want the agency to be back, and they want them to topple the Iranian regime.
And of course,
and it's not easy. I mean,
no, of course, it's not. History is
a brutal regime. I mean,
I hear you. History is not littered with examples, successful examples of freedom and democracy being imposed from without. Badia, thank you. I'm glad you were listening yesterday, Badia, and I'm very glad you were able to talk to us today. We'll talk again, I hope.
And I hope that I could contribute more.
Well, you remind us of the human face, you know, because it gets too binary too often, and footballification, you pick a side and you start shouting the odds, whereas the reality for most Iranians is going to be much more complex and much more nuanced than that. Thank you.
Shall I suggest one thing? One serious position that one can take, I mean, it is quite complex, like what has happened in Gaza, as you suggest. The position that we can get is should be rooted in the rule of law, human rights, those basic values. Then, I mean, it might be complex. Then we might not be rooting for different camps, like in favor of war or opposed to war.
The things that we should all be in favor of, actually. Exactly. You're right. No, I will be a bit more political than you, and I'll say that's kind of the path that Keir Starmer has walked with his adherence to international law and his careful consideration of the options at every turn. Badia, we will, as I say, talk again. Badia Afshin, they're an Iranian journalist who was listening to yesterday's programme while not able to contribute, but whose text was so thought-provoking. I thought that you and I would both benefit from hearing what he has to say today. It is 12 noon.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a Labour peer and former Defence Secretary is to warn later that the UK's long-term security is in peril. Lord Robertson will use a speech tonight to accuse who he calls non-military experts in the Treasury of vandalism. There's been deadlock in government in recent months over its defence investment plan, which has yet to be published. The Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey has told LBC that his party is willing to work with the government on the issue.
I've never known a time when we have been so ill-prepared for the threats that face us. And in the context of Donald Trump undermining NATO, potentially still pulling out of NATO, we have to be far more serious about defence. We need to have that debate that I think Lord Robertson has called for to make sure people really understand the scale of the threat. And we know we've got to invest in new technologies, you know, whether it's drone technology, learning from our Ukrainian allies, or missile defence regime.
Ministers insist they've carried out the largest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War. Sir Keir Starmer and Francis Emmanuel Macron are to co-host talks to discuss the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions in Paris on Friday are expected to focus on how the key waterway can be kept open after the war in Iran ends. Tehran has restricted shipping through the strait, which is a critical route for oil and gas. Officials from the US and Iran could reportedly reopen peace talks in Pakistan later this week. A second man's been charged in connection with the death of a 21-year-old student in northwest London. Finbar Sullivan was stabbed in Primrose Hill last Tuesday. Khalid Abdul Qadir, who's 18 and from Camden, is accused of grievous bodily harm with intent and possession of a knife. A 27-year-old man has already been charged with murder. Bosses of South East Water have admitted they let customers down following a major supply issue in Kent last year. 24,000 households faced disruption in November and December following a plant failure. Critical engineering works have since been completed, but Chief Executive David Hinton has conceded while addressing MPs this morning that he got it wrong.
There were definitely early warnings at the treatment works that the treatment was not performing as it should. Mm-hmm. We should have reacted on those earlier warnings quicker. And our problem solving around it when we got into that situation was too slow.
And the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have begun a four-day visit to Australia, their first trip there since 2018. Harry and Meghan greeted patients at a children's hospital in Melbourne earlier. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 5 points at 10,585. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry and sunny end to the morning and going into the afternoon for large parts of the UK. But some widespread outbreaks of rain will develop later in the day. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging. Or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 12 is the time, and it is back to, well, in a way, it's back to matters Middle Eastern that we return next, because the poor old king, the Pope, has announced that he's not going to the United States of America to celebrate the 250th anniversary. That is the purpose of the king's visit. The Pope is American, and there's not a particularly Catholic dimension to the Declaration of Independence. I'm not saying it's entirely divorced from that matter, but it's not anywhere near as intrinsic to the story as England is or as Britain is. And I mean, my feeling is that the king doesn't want to go. That is based on absolutely no knowledge, insight or understanding, but I can't quite see how he would want to. Keir Starmer has spoken most recently, yesterday, about the importance of this trip as a way of healing a rift with Donald Trump. Ed Davey, who I think was among the first to call for Starmer to call off the King's State visit, and that's an interesting selection of words. It is Starmer's decision, this, not the King's. The King does what he is told. It's one of the peculiarities of our Constitution, that the King is the head of state, but he is essentially an employee of the Prime Minister in moments like this. Ed Davey has urged Keir Starmer to call off the visit to the US. It's at the end of this month, by the way, amid concerns that Trump will embarrass him. He's gone a little further than he's gone before, describing Trump as a dangerous and corrupt gangster, for which he's unlikely to be sued, not least because Trump has just been told that his attempt to sue the Washington Post has, for now at least, failed. Good news for the BBC there. More on that tomorrow with Simon Marks. But the question of whether or not he should go has changed slightly from the last time I asked you the question, because the Prime Minister has offered up his reasoning, his rationale for insisting that it must go ahead. The relationship between our two countries, he said yesterday, is very important on a number of levels. And often what the monarchy is able to do through the bonds that they build is reach through the decades in a situation like this. And the purpose of the visit is to mark the 250th anniversary of the relationship between our country and the United States, and that is why the visit is going ahead. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. It's very easy to sit here And it's probably even easier to sit wherever you're sitting at the moment than it is to sit where I'm sitting at the moment and say that the Prime Minister should simply pull the plug on this. It's very, very easy to do. I'll show you how easy it is from the fact that I am about to do it. But there are two reasons why I think it would be the wrong thing to do. The first is that I can see no good coming of it. From what we know of Donald Trump, and if you didn't know this a year ago, or if you didn't know this 10 years ago, then you should really know it by now, even if you're reduced to pretending that committing a form of blasphemy is somehow more offensive than having your goons on the streets of Minneapolis shooting American citizens in the face, then you are at least finally being forced by events to admit that your support for this character was a hideous mistake. But I can see no good coming of it because of Donald Trump's character. Even if you were to secure, as we did with his state visit to us, even if you were to secure 10 minutes of warmth, 10 minutes of civilized relations, the clock would be ticking at the beginning of that 10 minutes, and the 10 minutes would soon expire, and he would return not just to a sort of status quo, or not just to a kind of platform of normal service. Trump would return to a position of attacking this country and its leader in unprecedented and extraordinary ways. So sending the king to expose himself to potential humiliation in the hope of reducing future humiliation for the Prime Minister seems to me, and this is not a word I don't think I've used before in the context of Keir Starmer, that seems to me to be really stupid. I mean, really, really stupid. It's as if, well, I don't know what it's quite like, but it's as if you're trying to appease the unappeasable. And then you move to the second reason why he shouldn't go, which is his own explanation for why he should go, Keir Starmer's explanation. The relationship between our two countries is very important on a number of levels, and often what the monarchy is able to do through the bonds they build is reach through the decades in a situation like this. So relations between Trump and the United Kingdom are bad, right? The reason why they're bad is because Trump is nuts. Trump is dangerous and deranged. Sending King Charles to Washington to visit the United States of America during the 250th anniversary celebrations will not stop Trump from being dangerous or deranged. Okay? Starmer's explanation, Starmer's logic, is that it will turn down the dial of how dangerous Trump is or how deranged Trump is. And if you think that I'm exaggerating how dangerous and deranged Donald Trump is, here he is talking about the picture he posted yesterday of himself represented as Jesus Christ.
Did you post that picture of yourself depicted as Jesus Christ?
Well, it wasn't depicted. It was me. I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support. And only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it, and I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better, and I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
Oh, I shouldn't have played that, because I've got to set up a phone-in about whether or not the king should go to America on a state visit. But now I'm going to have to spend at least 5 minutes picking over the bones of what we just heard. I'd only really seen the sort of headline previously. So the picture, it's on the front page of the Daily Telegraph, which is pretty much is to Donald Trump what the Beano was to Dennis the Menace. This is the picture, right? Thank you, for the first time ever, to the Daily Telegraph. This is the picture Donald Trump is referring to. Remember, Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail thinks the country should be led by this guy instead of Keir Starmer. But it's not the Daily Mail today, it's the Daily Telegraph to which we turn. This is the picture in which Donald Trump thinks, A, that he looks like a doctor, and B, that anybody who thinks that he looks like Jesus is lying because they belong to the fake news and they're trying to make him look bad. Unfortunately, nobody asked him why he then subsequently removed this picture. So, some thoughts off the top of my head. Number one, it's perfectly plausible. There is no Red Cross in that picture. There's no Red Cross in that picture. That's thought number two, actually, but I'm putting it ahead of thought. There's no Red Cross in that picture. So, I mean, gibberish isn't even adequate to describe what's going on here. Thought number two is, why is he curing Jeffrey Epstein? And that's pretty controversial at the best of times, right? That's an extraordinary flex that he's undertaken there. Thought number three, is he here, perhaps, the reason he thought he was a doctor is that he is administering the UV light that he previously claimed could cure COVID. Is that what he's doing? I'm a doctor and I'm giving light to Jeffrey Epstein to cure him of COVID. Thought number four. Let's have another listen again while I come up with thought number four.
Did you post that picture of yourself depicted as Jesus Christ?
Well, it wasn't depicted. It was me. I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support. And only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it, and I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better, and I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
I mean, you know, I do this thing where I find some comedy in what Donald Trump is doing, and then sometimes I listen to it for the second time, and I feel the comedy growing. I feel the sense of the absurd and my delight in the madness of the moment increase. And then other times, there's no way of predicting whether it's going to happen or not. Other times the opposite happens, and I find myself thinking, how can you be laughing at this? I mean, we're human, right? We have to laugh. But good God, he's in charge of what's going on in Iran at the moment. He's looking at this picture and telling you that anyone claiming that he is being depicted as Jesus is a liar. That's what he's doing. He is looking at you and pointing at this picture and saying, if you believe anybody who tells you that I am Jesus in this picture, then they are mad. Or they—I mean, that is the action of an abusive partner. That is gaslighting. That is, you know, telling somebody that you are abusing that it's all in their mind and they must be going mad. Of course, I'm not cheating on you, are you? But that is absolutely the behaviour of an abusive partner. What you can see with your own eyes is not so. It's not funny, is it? Should we play it once more and see if it gets funny again?
Did you post that picture of yourself depicted as Jesus Christ?
Well, it wasn't depicted. It was me. I did post it.
Yes.
And I thought it was me as a doctor.
Oh, a doctor.
And had to do with Red Cross as
Where's the Red Cross
worker there, which we support.
There's no Red Cross worker there.
Only the fake news could come up with that.
Okay.
I just heard about
it's not
it.
Funny.
And I said, how did they come up with that? I
hate it when that
it's
happens.
It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better. And I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
I hate it when that happens. I hate it when it starts off funny and it ends up frightening. Yeah? Starts off funny and it ends up frightening. And the weird thing about this story is that a bunch of shills, client journalists, cheerleaders, have suddenly put their pom-poms away over this. I don't want to offend anybody. I was raised as a Catholic myself. But you can't prove that God exists, whether you're an Islamist fundamentalist or a Christian fundamentalist. You can't prove that God exists, whether you're the Pope or whether you're Bob on the Clapham Omnibus. You can't prove that God exists. All the things that Trump has done to people who do exist, you can prove all of that. People that his goons have shot in the face on the streets of Minneapolis, you can prove that. People that are now dead in Iran, you can prove that. The genocide in Gaza that has been undertaken with his full approval, you can prove that. It's all happened. But elements of the right-wing media getting sad and upset today about offending beliefs as opposed to offending reality, it's extraordinary. People who praised Orban, Trump was praising, or anyway. How the hell can the king go and visit this man now? 03456060973. What I want you to do first and foremost is not necessarily argue with me, because I don't think it's that kind of conversation necessarily, but try to persuade me that this is not one of the biggest mistakes Keir Starmer has made. Not diplomatically or in terms of international relations, but this is the stuff that he's really bad at. Reading a room. How the hell can he be telling the king? And I don't think that the Dimbleby brother, whichever one it was, I forget, forgive me, it might have been both of them, but one of the Dimblebys has let it be known that he doesn't think the king should be going to America. And I have a cursory understanding of these matters from my long distant brief days on Fleet Street and some of the stuff that I remember from those days. I don't think that a confidant of the king would be making these points publicly without some form of permission. I honestly don't think that David Dimbleby, the epitome of journalistic diplomacy, would be sticking his oar in without running it by the king first. I can't prove that. I wouldn't know how to. I don't think that I need to. My personal opinion is, based upon some understanding of the matters and the individuals, and some knowledge even of the individuals involved, did a wonderful full disclosure with David Dimbleby not long ago, I don't think that he would have done that without some sort of permission. I think he is making the same mistake again that he made with Peter Mandelson. I think that he is prioritizing appeasement. He is thinking, we can do this thing because we are feeding the monstrousness. We are looking at Donald Trump's monstrousness, and rather than condemning it, as Sir Ed Davey has felt free to do, rather than criticizing it or highlighting it, we are forced to accommodate it. So we will accommodate his monstrousness, and we will hopefully minimize it. And I don't hold a particular brief for the king, although he seems like a decent fellow, and he's raised at least one excellent son. I don't hold a brief for the king, but I do find myself feeling very sorry for him in this moment, because I think Starmer is kind of using him on a fool's errand to dial down the derangement and danger that Donald Trump represents in ways that will simply not happen. So, on what possible planet should the king, I'm going to say of England because it sounds better, should the king of England be going to visit the mad, deranged, dangerous liar, Donald Trump? Paint me a picture of positivity. So what's the best case scenario? 0345 6060973. And what is the worst case scenario? And what is your answer to the question of whether or not the king should go anywhere near this hideous human being who yesterday compared himself to Jesus, lied about it, and then claimed that anybody claiming that he'd compared himself to Jesus was mad? How can the king walk into that room and come out with a win? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
Next contestant, your chosen subject is tax.
Said no one ever. HMRC doesn't expect you to be a tax expert, but knowing the basics will build your confidence and help you steer clear of any tax surprises. So check our simple explainers to fill your knowledge gaps, from business essentials to pensions and tax. Search HMRC Tax Confident to learn more.
McDonald's cards are here. 24 cards to find and free food in every pack. Enter cards in the McDonald's app and complete sets with over £4 million in cash prizes to be won. McDonald's cards. 18 plus UK only with selected meals subject to availability. Ends 27th of April. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cashback?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two.
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It's 22 minutes after 12. This happens occasionally. My brain's gone. It's gone off whirring in all billions of different directions. Because now I'm thinking, why is Starmer's doing something really cynical? What if Starmer's being really Machiavellian here? Because I said to you a minute ago, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst case scenario? King Charles gets sent on this fool's mission, this fool's errand to the White House to break bread with the maddest man in the history of American politics. And he will probably be put into an incredibly uncomfortable situation. What is the most uncomfortable thing that could happen? I'm going to rule out he'll get told off for not wearing a suit. I'm going to do that for two reasons. Number one, I've never seen him not wearing a suit. It's like my late father in that respect. And number two, I don't think Donald Trump or any of the sycophants and cronies he surrounded himself with would have the audacity to speak to the king in the way that they spoke to Volodymyr Zelensky, because they are, by definition, forelock tucking, cap doffing cretins. So that's not going to happen. After that worst case scenario, I don't think he's going to make any inappropriate comments about the Queen, although it's not impossible. He'll probably be quite rude about Keir Starmer. That is, for me, when I use the word probably, the most likely disaster, the most likely diplomatic debacle. But who does that hurt? If Donald Trump is obnoxious about Keir Starmer in front of the King, then that is a difficult diplomatic situation for the King. It's a borderline humiliation for the King, and I use the word humiliation because it would be such an egregious breach of diplomatic relations that it puts the King in a hideously uncomfortable position. But it doesn't hurt Keir Starmer. In many ways, Keir Starmer could come out of that encounter enhanced, because even the tiny number of people still clinging to the carcass of Donald Trump's reputation would have to let go if he ended up insulting him. Well, they wouldn't, would they? But some of them might. Doesn't matter what happens there, because nothing can make things worse for Keir Starmer. So just because they're not going to make anything better doesn't mean he shouldn't roll the dice. It's going to send him anyway. What's the worst that could happen? What's the best that could happen? And should he stay, in the words of The Clash, or should he go? 24 minutes after 12 is the time, and I got two calls from Scotland. Where shall I go first? Shall I go to Dumfries or to Edinburgh? I'll go to Edinburgh. Chris is there. Chris, what do you reckon?
Hi. Well, you know, so I've lived here for 8 years, but I am American.
You're still telling people that. I was on a tour in Dublin not long ago, and all of the Americans on the bus pretended to be Canadian.
Yes, that is definitely the temptation, for sure. Let me just say, nobody asks me, am I staying any longer? Nobody asks me. So, generally, I would say no. The king should not be going. But there are probably two conditions under which it may turn out okay. One is, if we firmly believe that Trump's reaction to him not going is going to inflame things even more than if he did not.
Yeah, okay.
If he went, right? So there's that to consider. And then the second that I would want to see happen is the king deliver some kind of a Mark Carney at Davos kind of speech, right?
Yeah.
Where it's not, you know, a way to get across a point for the history books that this is not normal.
A bit, I mean, not unlike what the Pope has been doing in the last few days.
Yeah,
singling out Trump by name, but speaking in a way that makes it absolutely blindingly obvious who and what he's talking about. I think the correct word is oblique. It's one of my favourite words, actually. He's doing it obliquely. So the king could deliver an oblique critique of Donald Trump. But, I mean, I don't think he can do that off his own back, can he? He'd probably have to clear that with Starmer first.
Not familiar with how that would work, but I, you know, if there was some way, are there things that the king could say that Starmer can't?
Yeah. So he could end up having the Hugh Grant moment.
Maybe.
Could be King Charles who gets it. The first point, I don't know whether or not you make a brilliant point, or whether or not you fall into the trap that we describe on an almost daily basis now, which is that thinking Trump is in any way normal. So even if it signalled a tantrum, it would be over. And, the idea that anything that you do with Trump sticks or lasts is just, it's just not true, is it?
Yeah. And I do wonder whether, do we have a moment here? And the thing that kind of tips me over towards, I really actually do hope that he calls it off.
Yeah, I do too.
Is that, do we have a moment here with Orban's loss in Hungary of gaining some momentum against the authoritarian tendencies of the world.
So sort of kick him while he's down, in a way, or kick the king of the authoritarian tendencies where it hurts, while his big mate in Budapest is licking his wounds.
That's
the best we've got, isn't it? Is it might make him even madder.
Mm.
That's the best we got.
That's pathetic, but that's where we are.
It's not great. Whew, thank God. Thank God I'm not American, Chris. Have a great day. Our Canadian friend there, Chris, in Edinburgh. It's 27 minutes after 12. Evan is in Dumfries. Evan, what do you reckon?
Hi, so I've got a couple of different angles, and there's a for and against in the middle.
Well, you've only got a minute and a half, but okay. I'll give you all of that.
Okay. On the first one, with religious sensibilities and blasphemy, sending the king to America to meet Trump is sending the head of the Church of England.
Yes.
So there's potentially the opportunity for offence, or that is perhaps in bad taste, to do that, given the blasphemous stuff. But I'm not sure that
How dare you call it blasphemy? It was a doctor.
I'm not sure there's an awful lot of concern about that.
No.
There is that parity idea, that we send our head of state to meet their head of state.
Yes.
And it's nation to nation, government to government, irrespective of who those individuals are. But the final thing is, I don't really care. And I don't think most people care. To take a kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs perspective,
yeah,
people care about food and shelter and security and safety. And when we're talking about, is this one of Keir Starmer's biggest mistakes? No, it doesn't affect the price of my mortgage or our food or our ability to work or our safety in a more tangible sense. Most people, I don't think, really care if the king goes and gets offended or doesn't get offended.
I'm just going to take a moment to work out whether I am responding to you in the spirit of a sixth form debating society or whether I actually mean the thoughts that have just been forming in my head. Would you excuse me for 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. I think you're wrong. I mean, the problem is I'm now falling into the trap that Chris is still screaming from the bottom of, by way of thinking that Trump is in any way normal. But all of the things on Maslow's hierarchy of needs are going to be affected by what's currently happening in the Middle East. And therefore, a, quotes, friendly, end quotes, Donald Trump is that you responding to what I'm saying, or is someone playing a kazoo in the background?
Oh, that's my daughter humming.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. It was someone playing a kazoo in the background. I just wanted to be clear that you weren't passing sort of non-verbal judgment on my analysis of your contribution to the programme. Keeping him sweet, even if that's impossible and a fool's errand, does actually affect all of the things that you've just described. So therefore, yeah, it isn't necessarily a meaningless question, a meaningless exercise.
It certainly does in a sort of indirect sense, but I think if we're looking at it in the sense of the news cycle and the amount of public and political attention we give it,
yeah,
it's probably well down the list of things, the priorities for the British public. So if we're saying, is that Keir Starmer's biggest mistake? Probably not, because he's done other things that may affect us as citizens,
yeah,
much more,
yeah,
directly, well, and much more significantly.
This is what my climb down was partly about during the break, when I came back and said, actually, the only person who's going to be hurt by this is the king. There's not a great deal Trump can do that has ramifications beyond that room. My friend Scott thinks he'll probably mention Diana, Princess of Wales, in a slightly inappropriate way in front of the Queen. And would you bet against that?
No, you know, Charles is an experienced, seasoned and pretty good diplomat.
Yes,
and I'm sure
true.
He can handle himself.
Yes, that's true. So, I mean, why not go? Because we're back to Chris's point. I wonder if that's going to be the winner, because not going would be worse than going.
That's ultimately, I don't mind. I don't think many people mind whether he goes or not.
And yeah, I really don't
think
he
might as well go.
I think there's some, and then back to the Dimblebees. Well, what if David Dimbleby is just doing a favour for his mate? He's just doing a solid for the king. And there isn't any particular ramification beyond this for the government or the country, regardless of what happens in the room. How much damage to Ukraine was done by the humiliation of Volodymyr Zelensky? And looking back on that now, everybody damaged by that encounter was on Donald Trump's side of the room, not on Volodymyr Zelensky's. Oh, so where am I deriving this slightly strong sensation that it would be a terrible mistake for him to go? I think partly because of a rather uncharacteristic, perhaps, relationship with the monarchy itself. I don't know. I do not know. But you do, and you're going to ring me on 0345 606 0973. Matt Hewitt is here now with your headlines.
The government's insisting it's delivering the largest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War, as a former Labour defence secretary is due to accuse it of corrosive complacency. Lord Robertson, also a former head of NATO, is expected to say the military is underprepared in the face of growing threats and instability. Sir Keir Starmer and France's Emmanuel Macron will co-host talks on the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Separately, officials from the US and Iran could reportedly reopen peace talks in Pakistan later this week. And a second man has been charged over the death of a 21-year-old student in northwest London. The 18-year-old from Camden is accused of grievous bodily harm with intent and possession of a knife after the stabbing in Primrose Hill last Tuesday. LBC weather, rain spreading from the southwest, leaving sunshine confined to the far north and east of the UK. Highs of 8 to 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
There comes a time in your life when you need to make a change, to start a new chapter. It's time to consider a residential park home bungalow from Ecos Group. Castleview Court in Pevensey is a peaceful gated community for those aged over 45, set in a stunning location close to all local amenities. You can enjoy a stress-free move with up to 100% part exchange on your existing property with free site fees for your first year. Make that lifestyle change today and join us at our open weekend on the 25th and 26th of April at Castleview Court, Pevensey Bay, Pevensey. Or visit ecosgroup.co.uk. That's ecosgroup.co.uk.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a Nestlé Milky Bar 2-pack dessert. Now just 75p, down from £2.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 21st of April. Club card or app required.
I've just had a thought. My home needs to feel less student with one teaspoon and more a home that actually feels like me.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost. Because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas, and Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:35. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just knitting together a couple of the stories from earlier in the week before we get back to one from later in the month, i.e. the King's mooted visit to the United States of America. How on is that it? Is that it? Is that what we're going to end the hour with? Well, he's got to go, because if he didn't go, it would be worse than if he does go. If they called it off, the ramifications would be worse than if that... And am I being deferential now? I'm feeling sorry. Why am I feeling sorry for the king? Everyone has to do rough things at work. Should see some of the people I have to work with. Could you imagine any other... No, not you, mate. Calm down. Could you imagine any other context in which... the poor old king. He's going to take a few days off from his enormous castle and he's got to go and spend about 4 hours in the presence of a hideous human being. I don't know. I'm not being deferential. I'm not being forelock tugging, am I? Oh, my days. Should he stay or should he go? I've got a multiple choice for you. Which UK politician said in 2011, just thanked Viktor Orban at the end of the Hungarian presidency for being our secret weapon and helping us bring down the EU project? So Viktor Orban, of course, subsequently established as... A deeply authoritarian leader who had designs upon the rule of law, sought to co-opt the judiciary, rewrote the Hungarian constitution, made everything from public dissent and freedom of speech right through to sexuality, issues of repression. Which British politician could possibly have been praising him as long ago as 2011? Is it A, Cammy Badenoch? Is it B, Nigel Farage? Or is it C, Keir Starmer? Which British politician, in fact, no, British party leader, would have been praising a deeply authoritarian Kremlin ally? Do you know that one of Orbán's people was locked in his office yesterday, shredding stuff, according to some reports? This is a bloke that was recorded making comments about the Kremlin and about Russia that even Nathan Gill might have found a little bit hard to stomach. Nathan Gill, if you don't know, is the close friend and former protege of Nigel Farage, currently in jail for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge for promoting Kremlin talking points in the European Parliament. So who do you think it was that was thanking Viktor Orban at the end of the Hungarian presidency for being, and I quote, our secret weapon and helping us bring down the EU project? Oh, all right, then, you're right. It was this guy.
Well done, Bannon. Well done, Breitbart. You helped with this hugely.
And there he is thanking Steve Bannon, close friend of Jeffrey Epstein, and someone who appears in the Epstein files almost as often as Donald Trump does, of course. Donald Trump, the man that Nigel Farage considers to be the bravest man he's ever met. And the far-right website Breitbart being thanked there by Nigel Farage in footage that mysteriously disappeared from some platforms for the role that they played in Brexit. So, again, those alarm bells keep on ringing, but some people still can't hear them. 12:38 is the time. I have got another story for you from that corner of British politics, but let's get back to the King in the meantime. Alan is in Nottingham. Alan, what do you reckon?
Hi, good afternoon, James. It's nice to speak with you again.
Likewise.
It's ironic. Me and my mum were having this conversation on Sunday, and we had two very different views. I thought that the visit should get cancelled. She thought it should go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it should get cancelled because my fear is this could... It has an even higher risk now of embarrassment for the King, because I think the last few weeks have shown now you literally cannot predict from one day to the next what words, tweets, truth socials, AI images are going to come out of this president's mouth. You've just got absolutely no idea.
This is the one thing that people like Dick Littlejohn have in their defence at the moment. The one thing they could turn around and say is that you lot said he was completely bonkers a year ago. So what do you say he is now, then? If he was completely bonkers a year ago, how do you account for the Jesus stuff? And you can point out that, he has gone arguably a little madder than he
Absolutely.
Was before, but he was already utterly disgusting. But you're right. I mean, the idea that there's any hope whatsoever of an even keel being maintained has left the building.
It's gone. But her side of the argument as to why he should have gone, and I am ever so slightly leaning towards it, is because I think the King has the same skill set as what the late Queen did in terms of his ability to talk to political leaders of all walks of life,
yes,
ilks, backgrounds. And I think for us now as a country, this is probably very much now a last throw of the dice, because I think if this fails to lay any form of solid foundation between the Trump administration and the current government we have here.
Yes,
I don't know what else we can do now. I don't, because we.
So it's a slightly desperate last throw of the dice.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah,
and that leads us back to the question of what is the worst that can happen? Because in the great scheme of things, the King and the Queen have an absolute nightmare. Few hours. In the great scheme of things, that's a sort of so what situation.
Yeah, and I think Starmer has to prepare himself. I'm sure he probably is, but I'm sure he has to prepare himself now for that worst case scenario. Because I think if it is the worst case scenario, and the King is embarrassed or humiliated on the international stage, I don't see how Starmer will be able to, going forward, kind of toe that line and maintain that very, very...
Well, that works in Starmer's favour as well.
It
liberates
him. I suppose, yeah.
This is the thing that only occurred to me long after I'd finished my introduction to this topic, is that it could work in Starmer's favour, even as it is a diplomatic disaster. Because, it removes any last vestiges of a rational basis for supporting Trump, if there are any, or for favouring Trump, or for cozying up to Trump. And, B, it frees up Keir Starmer to say, well, look, you might be comfortable with genocide in Gaza, but you can't be comfortable with him slagging off the King. So will you now join me in slagging off Trump?
Yeah, quite possibly, because, I mean, I seem to produce it. If we look back to not long ago when we rolled out the red carpet for the second state visit, we gave him all the pomp and ceremony, all the red carpet treatment. He was stood there at the banquet. What a wonderful guy the king is. What a wonderful country this is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he hadn't even made it. His plane hadn't even landed back in America. Crazy. I think Sadiq Khan was his hot topic at that moment in time, worst London mayor on earth and blah, 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 blah. But he hadn't even made it back to America before he was, I hope I'm allowed to say this, but slagging this country off.
Yeah, of course you're allowed to say that. You worried me then, honestly.
I was nervous when I said it to your producer, but I think this really is now, I think unfortunately it is going to go ahead. I think, yes, okay, they could cancel these things, I'm sure, at lastminute.com, but I think it is going to go ahead, but I think this is very much now a last throw of the dice, because if this doesn't work, I don't know what else we've got in our itinerary to use to try and build some form of working relationship.
The keep him sweet, try to keep him sweet policy. This could be the final nail in its coffin, and that would actually, in my personal opinion, be a rather good thing, both for the country and for the government. They could be a little bit more like Spain. Italy today has announced something that many people might like to see Keir Starmer announce in the context of Benjamin Netanyahu, but to liberate Starmer from the try to keep him sweet school of thought. I hadn't thought of that, and it's emerging. So you're admitting your mum was right, are you, Alan?
Yeah, I'm never going to say my mum's wrong.
She usually is, mate. She usually is, though, isn't she, eh? Hey, it's coming up to 12:44. Thank you. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I got a lovely message from Ash earlier, who was on yesterday, flexing his maritime expertise muscles to all of our benefit once again. Ash, former officer in the Merchant Navy, now in the business of teaching merchant seamen. And indeed, educating everybody else on matters maritime. But he was talking yesterday, we were talking yesterday about the Trump half of the blockade and the Strait of Hormuz. And if I'm speaking to someone like Ash, then I sometimes feel a little bit more confident in thinking out loud than I would if I was on my own, because they really know what they're talking about. And if I make a fool of myself, they will politely point it out. But I think we got it right, because on Newsnight last night, their rather splendid political editor, Nick Watt, revealed that he'd been talking to a very senior British defence source about precisely that issue regarding Trump's plans to blockade the Strait of Hormuz. And Nick said on Newsnight, this person basically guffawed and said, as in, it will only work if the United States is willing to shoot at a Chinese oil tanker, which is pretty close to the point that we made, or that Ash made on the programme yesterday. And he takes it a little further, if you follow him on Blue Sky or Substack today, positing the existence of a tanker full of helium, Chinese-owned or Chinese-linked helium trying to get through, because that's a more perishable cargo than oil. So many ramifications here. And the only thing you can say with any certainty about what is likely to happen next is that Donald Trump understands absolutely none of it.
Coming up at 1, Sheila Fogarty, leading Britain's conversation. Next on LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing too savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing too savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Your time is valuable. Your perspective should be too. The Economist cuts through the noise with the stories that truly shape your world.
How can you believe that a new regime won't crush you just like the previous one?
Online scams are stranger than they've ever been.
When the world's turned upside down, know which way is up. Read, watch, or listen to The Economist.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 12:47 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know why I'm bigging up Newsnight. I don't work there anymore, haven't done for years, but it was on that programme, which is now, of course, brilliantly presented by the inimitable Victoria Derbyshire, that David Dimbleby made the comments we were alluding to earlier.
We're dealing with a president who is a narcissist and a bully, and he's been bullying Britain. He's been rude about the armed forces, about our role in Afghanistan. The king is head of the armed forces. And I think a rebuke of some kind is necessary. I don't see that the full panoply of a state banquet and a speech at Congress is appropriate. I think it's a misuse of the king, who has to do what he's told by the government. But I think it's giving Trump more than he deserves.
I completely agree with David Dimbleby, or at least I did at 12:05. You know how this... Well, indeed, at 12:20 when I finally got to the end of my introduction. But I always reserve the right to change my mind, and it is always you that changes it. And I am now... I mean, because Dimbleby speaks from a position of being pals with the king, and therefore probably, almost certainly, speaks with permission in that kind of context. And I've got no beef with that. That's what I'd want my friends to do for me in the unlikely event of me ever becoming king of these islands. But, I don't particularly care about, or I shouldn't, that's the problem, isn't it, this hour. It turns out I do care, but I don't want to care about the king's feelings. I wouldn't want anybody to be publicly humiliated, but if I had to pick between the king and Volodymyr Zelensky, I'd pick Volodymyr Zelensky to be spared. He's embarked upon rather more important business at the moment than the King of England is. So what's the worst that can happen is that the king gets humiliated. What's the worst that can happen if you call it off? Trump gets even mad. Ah, it's a 52. It's 52-48. It's 52-48. And speaking of 52-48, a story that you may have missed. Queen Elizabeth was, quotes, dismayed, end quotes, about David Cameron's handling of Brexit and confided in Barack Obama about her concerns over calling a referendum, according to a new book. By a very respected American journalist called Susan Page. The book, The Queen and Her Presidents, The Hidden Hand That Shaped History, actually sounds rather appetizing. And she reveals that at a lunch which took place 2 months after Cameron called the referendum, she offered a very rare royal critique. Describing the conversation, Obama said, she said effectively, it's hard to understand why a prime minister would put a public referendum forward that he didn't know what the answer would be of such importance. Long-held suspicions that the Queen was bright enough to understand how damaging and disastrous Brexit would be for Britain for generations to come, receiving more support and confirmation here. Also, speaking about Donald Trump, she apparently asked, why is this person so close to running your country? Which has rather resonated through the ages, hasn't it? So there's a little reference to Brexit and to the 52-48 ratio, which is pretty close to what I'm feeling now. It is 10:01. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC and Michael in Bodwell. All the callers are from Scotland on the question of whether the king should go to America. What do you think, Michael?
Hi, James. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. From Starmer's perspective, I think it's a no-brainer.
Go on.
Look, if Charles goes, King Charles goes and there's a diplomatic incident, That's going to make life very, very difficult for the right-wing press and the right-wing parties in the UK, because they're going to have to pick a side in the aftermath. So from that perspective, politically, from Keir Starmer, I don't think he can lose. If the visit goes incredibly well, then does it not put a little bit of pressure on Trump to wind back the rhetoric? So, I don't know. It just feels like, from a political perspective, Sir Keir doesn't have a lot to lose.
Because the worst that could happen is that the king gets humiliated, and that plays well, to be cynical for a moment, domestically, that plays well for Starmer.
Well, presumably all of the tabloids and all of the roundabout painters and all of the flag wavers have the king in very high regard. So how will they feel about Trump if he disrespects the king?
So the sort of gammon army, when forced to choose between their admiration of Donald Trump or their patriotic loyalty to the king, would have to, you conclude, hop for the king?
Potentially. Yeah. But also the press are going to have to carry headlines against one of their...
They are, but that won't stop them from doing a massive reverse ferret 2 days later and favouring Donald Trump over our own democratically elected Prime Minister again. Unfortunately, that kind of stuff never sticks. But in the moment, I'm coming round to your... I was already coming round to what you've just described, but I'm finding it... I'm finding it pretty hard to resist the idea that there is no really, really bad case scenario for Starmer. But, well, I suppose Trump slags off Starmer in front of the king. The king has to stand there and sort of suck it up. Can't really respond robustly without causing a diplomatic incident. But even if he did, that wouldn't be a problem for Starmer back home. What, hang on a minute. You could have... here it comes. Here's your Daily Mail front page. Starmer humiliated in White House.
Yeah, that could.
So they're not backing the king. They're just going to go in on the humiliation of Starmer, and so it's not really a win for him at all.
But isn't it a state visit? Isn't it? It's not a Keir Starmer visit. It's a state visit. So it's all about the king, isn't it?
Yes, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be.
I'm sure Donald Trump won't like that, but I'm afraid it is.
Yeah, well, from this side of the Atlantic, What about the personal feelings of the king? I mean, I don't want to sound callous when I say I don't care. I do care. I don't want anybody to be exposed to unpleasantness that's undeserved. But we're probably slightly prioritising the...
I think I'm very like you. I don't want to care, but I kind of do care. But I think a lot of that, James, has to do with the legacy of his mother and what she left. And if all of that legacy comes down to a really embarrassing moment in the Oval Office on television, as we've seen these over the last year or so, then that would be horrible.
Yeah, no, I mean it is. It's become more interesting as the weeks have passed. I can't remember when we first asked this question. I was pretty adamant then that he shouldn't go, and I made a very rare wrong prediction, although it, of course, hasn't necessarily been proved completely wrong yet. I predicted, somewhat tongue in cheek, that the king would pull what is technically known in royal circles as one's sickie. The king would pull one's sickie, and he hasn't. And he'd have been perfectly entitled to, because the poor fellow hasn't been well, and they could diplomatically announce that there's been a postponement of the visit, and then in brackets everyone would say, until Donald Trump stops being a mad, deranged person, close brackets, but everybody else would read it as just being, you know, they've called the whole thing off. Yeah, look, he might somehow play a blinder. There's always the chance of Charles turning out to be the one that does the Hugh Grant moment. Alexander is in Lewisham. Alexander, what would you like to say?
I'm just hearing around this debate. I hear the same thing. I mean, with this, everybody's got their head in the sand about the special relationship and that, and no one wants to believe it. And I hear the same kind of thing around the king and Donald Trump, that Trump has this great respect for the king and great respect for the monarchy and all of that. But I don't think he does. He loves the pomp.
He doesn't have the respect for anything. He doesn't have respect for anything or anyone. He only likes things insofar as what they can give to him.
Exactly. So, you know, that's all he likes is the ceremony and that. So there's nothing to stop him from, you know, being an idiot and making the king look bad. And I think that, so I disagree that Starmer has nothing to lose, because I think if it happens, people are going to blame Starmer.
Oh, how could the Prime Minister possibly have exposed the King to such humiliation? But and of course, now I'm going to say, but how can the newspapers that have been cozying up to Donald Trump for years possibly now say Starmer's made a mistake by exposing him to Donald Trump, to which the answer is they are morally bankrupt cretins, so they'll claim anything that makes them a few kind of headlines?
Yeah, they'll say what they want, but the point is the regular people, given that a lot of people have a thing and it's...
have a negative view of Trump.
I think it's going to be the final straw for Keir Starmer for a lot of people, simply because everybody knows. Why would you do that? Because
Oh, lordy, I wasn't expecting this hour to be quite as pendulum-like as it is actually being, but we've gone from being fairly confident that it's a no-lose situation to Starmer to thinking that the public may never forgive him for exposing the King to epic humiliation. The two best texts of the day have come in the last 60 seconds. The first is from Ed, who writes, Charles should go dressed as Jesus. And the second is from Chris, who points out to me, and only to me, you can't exactly postpone the United States' 250th anniversary, James. And you're absolutely right. That was a bit of a flaw. Why did no one else point this out at the time, that I was shooting my mouth off about how the King should pull a sickie? You can't postpone... Well, anyway, it is 12:57. Last word on this to Mark, who's in Pulborough. Mark, what do you reckon?
I reckon, hi James.
Hello, Mark.
I reckon he should go.
Okay.
And all because of the state visit. It's not just a normal state visit. It's 250 years of America. There's 360 million Americans. A lot of them quite like Britain.
Yes.
And they quite like the...
So he's going for the ordinary people, not for the president.
Exactly, and he could actually say that in a statement as well.
That would be a little nod, an oblique little side point, wouldn't
it? Absolutely.
I'm delighted to be here celebrating with the American people.
That's where he has to go, and I'm sure he will. And don't forget, they've remained friends after a war that kicked England or Britain out of America, so they can weather Trump.
And there
Charles,
it is.
And Charles is brilliant at it, I think.
That is a perfect end to a rather enjoyable conversation, for which I thank you, Mark. It is coming up to 12:59. I'm told that I did point out Jonathan Dimbleby is the one who's particularly close to the King. David, I'm told, keeps a professional distance. As do I. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back. What are you sniggering about? If you listen, I do keep a very professional distance. I've never been near him in my life.
Yeah, me too.
You can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. And full disclosure, I'll be back on Friday after a one-week hiatus. I'm off to record it now. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick with you at 4, but now it's time for Her Royal Highness.
Oh, thank you very much. HRH, Arshi. At 3 today, the love gospel, according to the boxer David Hay. Is he a truth teller or full of it? At 2, the families of the children murdered in Southport in 2024 say they'll name individuals from 5 public agencies unless something concrete follows yesterday's report in terms of taking responsibility. Who do you think is responsible, apart from the murderer, of course? The parents, to some degree, to a full degree? Prevent? Social workers? Police? You tell me. But we'll start with defence. A former Labour Defence Secretary, Lord Robertson, has launched a scathing attack on Keir Starmer and the Treasury, in fact, on defending the realm.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the government's insisting it's delivering the largest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War, as a former Labour Defence Secretary is due to accuse it of corrosive complacency. Lord Robertson, also a former head of NATO, is expected to say the military is underprepared in the face of growing threats and instability. Deputy Chairman of the Conservatives, Matt Vickers, told us what his party would do.
We've said that we will bring back the two-child cap and invest all of that money in putting more troops on the ground. We've also said about taking away some of the money being spent on net zero research and projects and invest that.
Sir Keir Starmer and France's Emmanuel Macron will co-host talks on the future of the Strait of Hormuz. Discussions on Friday will focus on how the key route for oil and gas can be kept open after the Iran war ends. Separately, officials from the US and Iran could reportedly reopen peace talks in Pakistan later this week. A killer nicknamed Nasty will serve at least 16 and a half years behind bars for the murder of a deaf woman in East London. 36-year-old Dwayne Owusu was found guilty of punching Zawa Salah Mukhtar and leaving her to die in the street last August. The cause of death of the Soham child killer, Ian Huntley, has been confirmed. His inquest heard that he died in hospital from a head injury last month after being attacked in prison. LBC's Phoebe Abruzzese has been at Crook Coroner's Court in County Durham.
The coroner's officer told the court that Huntley had been struck over the head multiple times by another prisoner and that he was left with significant head injuries. Anthony Russell is alleged to have carried out the attack in the workshop of HMP Frankland. The 43-year-old's been charged with murder and is expected to put in his pleas later this month.
And bosses of South East Water have admitted they've let customers down following widespread supply issues in Kent. Around 24,000 households faced disruption from a plant failure late last year. Critical engineering works have since been completed. Chris Chain from the firm addressed MPs on the Environment Committee this morning.
Failure is failure, and we have failed. What's important is that we as an organisation learn from that in order that we don't fail at any point in the future.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 6 points at 10,589. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather. Rain spreading from the southwest, leaving sunshine confined to the far north and east. Highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. You'll probably remember if you were listening yesterday, just before four, the Prime Minister had a bit of a sort of back and forth with Kemi Badenoch, the Leader of the Opposition, on defence, other elements of the war as well, but specifically on defence. And I commented after we left the Commons on how there was a lot of word soup there from the Prime Minister, but there was no sense of a plan, a timetable for when we're going to know the serious long-term figures for how much defending this country is going to cost, and therefore some of the losses in other areas of our spending. To give you a sense of it, the reason I'm talking about this at all, by the way, is that Lord George Robertson, you probably remember him as George Robertson, he was Defence Secretary, a Labour Defence Secretary in the Tony Blair years. He has made such scathing comments, and they're part of a speech he's going to give in full later in Salisbury, about not just Keir Starmer, but about the Treasury too. He's accused the Treasury of vandalism when it comes to defence. He was the author, by the way, Lord Robertson, of the Strategic Defence Review, which was published around 9 months ago. That was alluded to in the Commons yesterday as well. And we haven't yet had any public response from the Treasury or the Prime Minister as to what the implications of that spending review are. They were deemed to be sensible and realistic in the world that we live in at the moment. He was also the chief of NATO at one time, Lord Robertson, as well as the Defence Secretary here in the UK, a significant Labour figure and a significant global figure, given that role that he had between 1999 and 2003 in NATO. I've got some of the figures in front of me. I won't dig down too deeply into them just yet because I'm keen to talk to my guests, but they are, you know, what projections of what will be needed, could be needed, are pretty eye-watering. Let's talk to Tom Tugendhat about this, former security minister and Conservative MP for Tonbridge. Thank you for joining me today.
Good morning, Sheila. Good afternoon, sorry. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Does any of this surprise you from Lord Robertson?
One thing surprises me is that Lord Robertson is, you know, one of the most loyal of the loyal. And for him to speak out against Labour on a matter like this demonstrates the concern he's had. Because if there's one thing he's more loyal to than the Labour Party, that's the country, as he's demonstrated over many, many years of public service. So that's what surprises me, not his words, actually, because I don't know if you heard this morning, but Sky News are reporting that the MOD are looking for $3.5 billion in-year cost savings. Now, this just isn't serious. You know, we know the threats that we're facing, whether it's trying to get energy out of the Persian Gulf or facing down Russian ships that are trying to slice up our internet cables and leave us cut off. The idea that we've got some sort of $3.5 billion down the back of a sofa out of a defence budget of $60 billion is just not true.
Let's talk about some more of those figures, though. You know, you've talked there about the savings that are being suggested. The government, I guess, would come back at you and say they're committed to increasing UK defence spending to 2.5% of our GDP, our national wealth, essentially, by 2027. That's expected to cost an extra $6 billion a year. Immediate funding, the spring statement last year announced an additional $2.2 billion for the Ministry of Defence. Total planned investment, the government touted a total of over $270 billion to be invested in defence across this parliament alone, so over the next, 4 years. This review, I know, is looking at a longer term than that, but those are eye-watering figures, aren't they, that we're really going to need to know how we're going to afford.
Sheila, you've raised some really important points, and I agree with you. The government has set out a path to the future. Now, what we've got to hope is that Putin and the Ayatollahs agree with that path and stick to it. Is that a bet you want to take? Is that the gamble you want to make, that you think that our enemies are going to stick to the spending programme that we've determined? Because that's not how this works. The reality is our enemies get a vote. They get a vote by how they threaten us, how they assault us. And when you look at the Russian army today, this is an army that has done enormous damage to a European partner in Ukraine, done enormous harm, and has spent 4 years learning the modern ways of war with drone weapons and so on. Now, Ukraine has demonstrated you can hold them off, but you need the capability. And frankly, at the moment, we simply don't have it.
The words that Lord Robertson has used in this speech, which we've seen copies of or part of, and he's going to give the lecture in full later, as I said, in Salisbury, I mean, they don't hold back, do they? Or he doesn't, on the words he chooses. Corrosive complacency towards defence, putting the country in peril while it's under attack, describing the Treasury as being guilty of vandalism, and that the war in Iran should be a rude wake-up call. Is what he is saying, and is what you are saying, that these moves are all very well and good, tick, tick. They need to be bigger and they need to be sooner. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right, Sheila. Look, the reality is, you know, we all know that there is a plan.